family home where he allegedly killed four people, including a woman he and another soldier had allegedly raped. Along with partying and festivities this Independence Day, a number of grandmothers will be protesting U.S. involvement in Iraq. The latest tally has more than a dozen grandmothers joining anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan to mark the 4th of July holiday with a rally and fast in the nation's capital. You're listening to Air America Radio News. I'm Mike Piazza.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice. Only the finest jasmine rice is good enough to become Mahatma or Carolina jasmine rice. It's a gourmet treat you'll love. Try Mahatma or Carolina jasmine rice tonight.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. The USO receives no government funding and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people. To find out more, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
Attention! If you do not have health insurance, have limited health insurance, or are uninsurable and are worried about the cost of health care, this announcement is for you. For less than $2 a day, your entire family can save thousands of dollars on all medical expenses thanks to Synergy Health. With more than 600,000 providers around the country, Synergy Health can save you up to 60% on doctors, hospitals, hearing, vision, prescriptions, and even dental care. Plus, you'll get great savings on chiropractic, alternate medicine, and much more. And here's the best part. Synergy Health offers guaranteed acceptance to everyone, no matter what your health history or income, at the same low price. Call our 800 number and learn how Synergy Health is helping families like yours for less than $2 a day. There is no obligation, and the information is free.
Call 1-800-933-2596 for free information. That's 1-800-933-2596. There's absolutely no obligation.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-701-3026. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-701-3026. That was 1-800-701-3026. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-701-3026. Shipping and handling not included.
If you're thinking about replacing your home's windows, think Sears. Custom replacement windows from Sears are low maintenance, tilt in for easy cleaning, and may also help reduce your energy costs. Add beauty to your home with custom replacement windows from Sears. Just call 1-800-349-2532 for a free in-home consultation. Call now and save $375 on select styles. Trust Sears for professional installation, convenient financing options, and best of all, with Sears, your satisfaction is guaranteed. Call Sears now at 1-800-349-2532 and save $375 on select styles. Offer ends 7/29/06. License number available upon request, not available in all areas. See associate or ask your consultant for written limited warranty details. If it's time to replace your windows, call Sears now, 1-800-349-2532. That's 1-800-349-2532.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And happy 4th of July here in the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least clean elections, and now we're right in the middle here, Tuesday, the 4th of July, yesterday, and the day before, more or less, the Mexican elections. Tomorrow, the day they tell us they're going to tell us what a friend they have in W. What a friend they have in W.
What a friend we have in W. Upright, strong, and resolute.
Oh, yeah, he's taking it all over the world now.
God wished him to be our leader. The court could not but follow suit.
And now, you know, is Mexico doing the same thing? Are voting machines going to Mexico? Is caging going to Mexico? Is Choice Point going to Mexico? Could it be?
Life doth flourish in all its aspects when we're led by such as him.
Yes.
Choice arrived
there. You go, the voting.
Victory shall be his again that day.
Or his and his conservative buddies. Greg Pallas is on the line with us from London. He's the author of his new book, Armed Madhouse's website, of course, gregpallas.com. Hey, Greg.
How you doing, Tom? I didn't know you could play the guitar like that. That's pretty cool.
There you go.
I like that.
Thank you.
Can I get off my horse now?
Indeed. I thought it was a pretty good segue, actually, because if what I'm reading of the investigative reporting that you're doing for the BBC and you know just the general work that you do is accurate, the conservative candidate in Mexico could just as easily be singing that song, What a Friend We Have in W.
Well, actually, I save all the accurate stories for you, Tom. The inaccurate ones I give to, the truth is, yeah, in fact, it's eerie. Because if you know, obviously our madhouse was published before the Mexican elections, but if you turn to one of the illustrations, there is the secret contract of the United States FBI, your cashola, your war on terror warriors, who have a secret contract with Choice Point Company, the guys that fixed the race in Florida, to get the voter records, to get the entire voter rolls of Mexico, which, by the way, is illegal to snatch voter rolls of Mexico. But nevertheless, hey, when your buddy is in trouble, leave no Republican behind. And the PAN is the kind of Republican Party of Mexico. Not kind of the Republican Party, I should say. They were also being funded and helped by something called the International Republican Institute, which is, in fact, an arm of the GOP.
Now, we should add, by the way, this is not exceptional. The International Republican Institute and its Democratic counterpart were both heavily involved in funding the movements to overthrow the elections in the Ukraine, in Soviet Georgia, in Serbia, and one other country that I'm forgetting. But there were four former Eastern European countries.
You know, here's the one. Yeah, in fact, actually, that's a very good point when we talk about Ukraine, Tom. If, you know, one of the points I made in my book I made before, the exit polls, when they're different from the official polls, means, hey, something stinks, man. And in Florida, exit polls, Gore wins, officially Bush wins. Ohio, exit polls, Kerry wins, officially Bush wins. Ukraine, officially the ruling party wins, but the exit polls showed otherwise. Mexico, and by the way, our government, because of, listen to this, Richard Lugar, Republican Senator Richard Lugar convinced our government not to certify the elections in the Ukraine because the exit polls were different from the official count, which just proves that Republicans are incapable of irony. Mm-hmm. And once again in Mexico, day before yesterday, the exit polls show López Obrador, the challenger, the left-wing challenger, winning, the official polls showing a supposed dead heat.
No,
and that's the official number. So, golly gee, we're seeing Florida, Ohio, Ukraine, and there it is in Mexico. And how could that be? And once again, I have a team right down there now. There's the Greg Pallas team is filming right now. And they're getting, once again, the same old line we heard over and over in Ohio, in Florida, in Ukraine, which is poor people going into poor people's precincts and coming out saying, my name was not on the voter roll. Same companies even, and by the way, the same apologist, Dick Morris, who went out and defended the Republican Party, saying that the exit pollsters must have been in a conspiracy to make Bush look bad. He actually said this on national TV in the USA. Don't listen to the exit polls. They're in a conspiracy. They ought to be investigated.
Now, Greg Palast,
he's down there now.
In today's Oregonian, it's a New York Times wire service story, though, so I'm assuming it's today's New York Times as well. They make the point that the exit polls in Mexico were showing a dead heat, just like the official election results are. Have the exit polls been changed the way that CNN changed our exit polls the night of the election?
Exactly. In other words, this is one thing that people have to understand. The exit polls in Ohio, when the polls closed, like by 1 a.m. when the first exit polls were released out of Ohio, showed Kerry winning the state of Ohio by 3%. The polls show, because they're broken by women, 2% among men and 6% among women. And so then the question becomes, what was the third sex that put George Bush over the top? But what happened was by the morning, by 6 a.m., the so-called exit polls were changed to conform to the initial count. They use an algorithm which over several hours conforms the two votes together. Isn't that cute?
Yeah. And it's no longer an exit poll.
Well, Tom.
I mean, it's really
you just said
I
was, you know, on. You've got a problem with democracy, don't you, Ohio style?
That night in November, whatever it was, 5th or 6th, November 2nd is what sticks in my head. Anyhow, the night of the Bush-Kerry election, I was doing election returns at WDEV in Vermont, one of our affiliate radio stations down the road from where we lived at the time. And I remember when the AP story came down the line around 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern time, that said that Karen Hughes had sat George Bush down in the White House and said because of the exit polls, it looked like he had lost. And that Bush didn't seem concerned by this and was going to bed. And I thought, that's a really weird story. 30 minutes later, almost to the minute, 30 minutes later, the AP declared Bush the winner. And all of a sudden, the exit polls had changed.
That's right.
It was like just this weird thing. And for those of us who were doing live reporting of it that night, it was like, hey, what happened? Did the world just move from underneath us? And it wasn't until the next day when some bloggers were showing, and I believe over on your website you were showing as well, the screenshots of CNN showing the exit polls with Kerry way ahead and winning. And then as soon as the official results came out, suddenly the exit polls got recalibrated. You're suggesting that the same thing is happening in Mexico.
Exactly. What's happening is these guys who are hired by the big media, and in Mexico, it's even a if you think that the lockup in the U.S. is bad, oh my God, in Mexico, it's horrendous.
Well, Mexico is essentially an oligarchy. There's basically 36 families, I believe, that rule that own about 80% of all the wealth in Mexico.
Exactly. So what happens is these exit polling operations, and in fact, Edison Media, which did the exit polling operation in the U.S., finally said, look, we have an algorithm which corrects our exit polls.
Right, recalibrate.
You know, in case the voters have made a mistake. And that's fair because, after all, we have a system, people like Ken Blackwell and Catherine Harris and now Calderon's party have a way of correcting the mistakes made by the voters, so why shouldn't the exit polls be corrected to reflect that?
It's literally the same guys
that do the same stuff. So it's not like they don't even change the cast. It's the same characters with the same games. And by the way, Mexico led the way to computer voting back in 1988. Guerrero State moved to all computer voting in Mexico.
And that was the election where and this has become a phrase across Mexico for corruption, where the progressive candidate was ahead, and all of a sudden the computers failed. They shut them down for 5 or 6 hours. When they brought them back up, the progressive candidate was behind, and the machine guy was ahead.
Yeah, it was huge.
Greg, we have about 20-30 seconds left. How do you expect this thing is going to play out in Mexico?
The rulers will rule. The exit polls and the real polls, and it will be over with. The question is whether Mexico will now burn down. I'm going to shoot down there, and I'll report for you and tell you what's up.
Hmm.
See the documents yourself, man.
Do you think that there's a real possibility that the people are going to say, hey, wait a minute, we saw this happen back in 88, we're not going to let it happen again?
I think that there's a very good chance that people aren't going to say you're not going to do it again. And, you know, not everyone does a carry. Even if Obrador himself, López Obrador, says calm down, don't burn down this nation, I think you're going to see some people who actually think that maybe we shouldn't be stealing elections and getting away with it.
Yeah, amazing. Greg Palast, gregpalast.com, his new book, Armed Madhouse. Be sure and get a copy if you don't have one already. Greg, thanks for being with us.
Happy 4th.
Happy 4th to you, too, and enjoy London. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman radio program. Viagra for your brain, but not for Limbaugh's.
Country singers Bruce Robeson and Kelly Willis.
We had a gig in half an hour.
But with my allergies, I wasn't all there. I just couldn't sing.
I told her, you need Claritin D.
So I got Claritin Clear. Claritin D relieved my worst symptoms, even congestion and sinus pressure, fast. And I wasn't drowsy.
Told you, nothing works stronger, faster, or longer.
Find Claritin D on shelf or at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed among non-drowsy oral 24-hour OTC allergy products.
Live Claritin Clear.
Get the good stuff. Even with today's high-tech engines, a good old-fashioned oil change is still the most important maintenance you can do. Changing your oil every 3 months or 3,000 miles improves fuel economy and dependability and helps you avoid costly repairs. Right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Napa conventional motor oil for just $1.59 per quart. Price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Do you have one of those really good jobs in which your pay is automatically raised every single year by nearly $4,000? And the only way your pay hike can be withheld is if you choose not to accept it. You won't find these jobs in the Help Wanted ads, friends. You find them in Congress. Once again, our Congress creditors have generously bestowed a pay hike on themselves, raising their total annual take to $168,500 apiece. These are the same people who have refused to raise America's poverty-level minimum wage for 10 years and who have shown no concern for the majority of American working families whose wages have not even kept up with the rising cost of living. This month, House members voted for the 8th year in a row to up their own pay. In a little game of political dodgeball, congressional leaders of both parties run an insider scam that makes their pay raises automatic, unless they magnanimously vote to block it. Guess what? They don't. For 8 straight years, these statesmen have grabbed the money and run. Speaking of running, both parties' leaders have cut a secret Save the Incumbents pact, agreeing that their candidates will not use the pay raise as an issue in the fall elections. And you thought there was no bipartisanship left on Capitol Hill. Members tried to dismiss the pay hikes as a trivial sum, merely enough to keep them ahead of inflation. Over the 8 years of steady raises, however, these cost-of-living adjustments, as Congress likes to call them, have added a total of $32,000 to their paychecks. That's more than the annual income of most Americans, and it further isolates our Congress critters from the harsh economic reality being faced today by the great majority of people they supposedly represent. This is Jim Hightower saying, shouldn't at least one party be campaigning to bring Congress down to earth, starting with ending this soft cushion of automatic pay raises?
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing? On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder, millions of jobs are being exported, and now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout, America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour.
And it's one of those, well, it's 4th of July, first of all. Happy 4th of July. We're broadcasting live here from Little Beirut, also known as the People's Republic of Portland, Oregon. And yes, Little Beirut as George Bush Sr. refers to the city. We're proud to be here. And Lieberman, yeah. This is going to have to become our Lieberman alert theme music, I'll tell you. It has been our conservative alert theme music, but, well, I guess increasingly they're the same thing, aren't they? And that's the problem. It's Joe Lieberman has decided that he's going to become an independent Democrat. Right, here's the clip of Joe Lieberman yesterday.
If for some reason that doesn't work out, I'm going to be there as Senator Joe Lieberman, individual Democrat, asking for their support for reelection.
You get that? Individual Democrat. It's like, I am a member of a political party, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not a member of a political party, I'm an individual on the ballot. Now, the big danger, of course, here is that if Lieberman loses to Lamont in the primary, and if he refuses to bow out gracefully, as he certainly should, then he could split the vote and just totally, you know, he could play the role of the Ralph Nader spoiler kind of thing. And, you know, I don't know I'm not in Connecticut. I'm not real intimate with the details of the Republican challenger that he's going to be facing. But that should be an interesting one to watch. It's Joe Lieberman. Nothing, it's good theater, if nothing else, right? Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. Hey, Rick, happy 4th.
Yes, and Tom, happy 4th to you, and you're a great American for working today.
Thank you.
But, that was going to be my question about Lieberman. I guess if we look at Mr. Lieberman's voting record, it's pretty conservative. But to be fair, of course, our friend Bernie is an independent, and people can be independent if they want to, I guess, as long as their constituents elect them. And then
Bernie doesn't call himself an independent Democrat. He calls himself
true.
An independent,
that's
period.
True. But then we got Lincoln Chafee, too, who could practically be a Democrat if you look at his voting record. So
no, I'd say Lincoln Chafee is an Eisenhower Republican.
Well,
it's just
but
there's not many of them left.
Yeah, but nowadays an Eisenhower Republican is practically a socialist.
Well, and you could argue that Joe Lieberman is a yellow dog Democrat in some ways.
Yeah.
He's behaving like the Democrats in the South did in the 40s.
Sure. But you know what I'm thinking is something you just hit on there, and I'm glad I asked you for your opinion, even though you answered before I asked it, is that what he might do is divide the vote for, is it Mr. Lamont?
Yeah,
himself.
Ned Lamont. Yeah, in fact, it almost sounds like that's what he's doing. He's saying, if I can't have my way, then I'm going to take my marbles and I'm going to kick the board over, you know, mixed metaphors here, and scatter the chess pieces here and screw it up for any other Democrat. And I'm curious whether the Democratic Party is going to allow him to do that.
I don't think he could stop him, though.
Well, I don't mean that they're going to, like, stand in the way or have him arrested or something like that, but, you know, and they can't stop him from getting on the ballot, but they can certainly get out there and aggressively campaign against him.
But here's the thing, Tom. Now, you lived in New England for a while, and I think as I look at this, and I think I've mentioned it to Bernie in the past, even the Republicans in New England are a little more moderate than the rest of the country, aren't they?
By and large, you know, it really depends. I mean, you've got in Vermont, for example, right now, the Republican who's running against Bernie Sanders is, in my opinion, and I'm on his email list, I'm getting all these whack-out emails. I mean, he's got to be one of the most right-wing whack jobs out there. I mean,
okay.
Just really, the guy who's running against Bernie is just like, he is over the top. On the other hand, Jim Jeffords, Republican from Vermont, lifelong Republican, I actually voted for him for the United States Senate. You know,
but I mean,
first year I lived in Vermont because he was a decent guy.
Right, but if it's Snow and Collins too, they're pretty moderate for Republicans.
Yes, yes, I think that's the anomaly. I think broadly what's happened is that the Republican Party is increasingly being taken over by right wingers. Actually, it's possible that the pendulum is beginning to swing back the other way. But over the last 10 years, let's say, Really starting with the election of Ronald Reagan, the Republican Party started swinging hard to the right.
Well, it might have started with the Goldwater and the movement in 64. Even though they lost, they kind of laid the foundation for what's happened since.
Well, that's what they did. You know, after Goldwater lost in 64, there was a period of, I don't know, 6-8 years there where the Republican Party actually thought it was doomed. It was never going to come back. It was, you know, it was the way a lot of Democrats have felt, you know, after the 2004 election, after the 2000 election in particular, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen? We're doomed.
And even Goldwater himself there, you know, became more of a libertarian. He became disenchanted with the Falwell Robertson types.
Yeah, yeah. But the Democratic Party, as far as I can tell, bringing this back to Lieberman and Ned Lamont, everything I'm hearing from people within the Democratic Party and from Democrats in Connecticut who are speaking out in the media is that if Lamont wins the primary, and that's a huge if. That's still a huge if. I mean, keep in mind, Joe Lieberman's a sitting senator. Unseating a sitting senator is just a very, very difficult thing to do. If Lamont wins the primary, the Democratic Party is just going to go whole hog in support of Ned Lamont. And then the question is, how much of a role can Lieberman play as a spoiler in that race? Rick, thanks for the call. We'll keep an eye on this, and we'll see how it all shakes out. 27 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice, here on the 4th of July.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Summer's here, and that means lots of disgusting little ants marching through your yard and into your home. Used to be almost impossible to get rid of them, but not anymore. Now there's Grant's Ant Stakes, and they're guaranteed to work. Grant's Ant Stakes are different. They contain a unique baiting system that ants simply can't resist. They eat the bait, they share it with the rest of the colony, and they all die. Total colony elimination. Grant's kills ants. Guaranteed. Look for Grant's at your favorite stores and take control.
Every year I get itchier and itchier.
Honey, you're going to scratch your skin off.
As we age, skin is more prone to itching. And boy, scratching can do real damage. New Maximum Strength Lanacane penetrates skin twice as fast with powerful itch-stopping medicine. Plus, an antibacterial helps kill germs. Ah, that's better.
I haven't seen digging like that since you put in the petunias.
New Maximum Strength Lanacane stops the itch, saves your skin. Use only as directed.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Northwest Airline flight attendants have less than 2 weeks to negotiate with airline management under threat of a bankruptcy judge's destruction of their labor contracts. The court has granted Northwest the right to destroy the contract, but it put a 14-day stay on the decision. If the union doesn't reach an agreement, Northwest can impose its terms on the union. As Northwest's flight attendants struggle with that, they're also voting on switching their union representation. That voting ends July 6th. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is seeking to represent the flight attendants, replacing the Professional Flight Attendants Association at Northwest. Pat Friend, AFA CWA president, says Northwest flight attendants need the resources and experience of her union to get through this difficult time.
Nearly all of the workers at the Port of Oakland are now unionized after more than 200 workers voted in favor of organizing last week. The International Federation of Technical and Professional Engineers will now represent workers who in the past have typically filled the void when other unions at the port have gone on strike. The union represents many employees in management roles at the port. The average salary of the workers joining the union is between $70,000 and $80,000 a year, and they receive full medical benefits. The drive for unionization began more than 6 weeks ago out of concern of a future where non-unionized port workers typically are targeted when it comes time to make budget cuts. Traditionally, union members do not cross the picket lines of other unions, an issue that concerns port management now that nearly all of the port employees are in labor unions.
Nurses at Robert Wood Johnson Hospital in New Jersey are trying to win language in their contract that would protect their union rights from an upcoming expected anti-worker NLRB decision. The nurses want to guard against losing their union rights under the Kentucky River decisions. Employers in that case are trying to get the NLRB to exclude many thousands of workers from union protection by expanding the definition of supervisors.
Pilots at UPS have reached a tentative agreement with the package company on a new contract. The tentative agreement comes after 3 years of strike threats and stonewalling. The union is reporting that the agreement includes work rule changes and improvements to wages and pensions that will expire in 2011. In December of 2005, the pilots had requested that the two sides be released from federal mediation so they would be free to strike. That request was refused. More than 2,500 pilots are represented by the Independent Pilots Association at UPS. Here is today's economic report. Consumer confidence took a hit in May as Americans tightened their belts to pay for rising fuel prices. While spending still grew slightly by 0.4%, the Commerce Department said there are signs of cooling. There was also slower growth in the area of income growth, a sign that tends to correspond with weaker job growth.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
When you struggle with credit card bills every month, you're not just in debt. Debt is all around you.
I see people every day that are on the brink. They're going to go over the edge, and at the bottom is bankruptcy, and we pull them back.
The people who provide Care One Credit Counseling Services know how to help you get out of debt and get on with your life. So call now, 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019. We can help you stop the collection calls, pay off your debt sooner, and save up to 57% every month.
You do get to consolidate your payments. You only have to worry about making one payment a month instead of making three or four or five.
Call for licensing details. Get out of debt and get on with your life. Gather up your bills and talk to the people who can help, to the people who care. Call Care One Credit Counseling now. 800-297-3019. 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you at the place where we run rings around the right wing every single day. Well, Juro's Day, 5 days a week. Small entrepreneurs up and down the East Coast, building, buying, chartering small private ships to sail to other parts of Europe or India to buy tea below the prices the East India Company was setting in the United States in 1773, the day the 4th of July, celebrating the Declaration of Independence. The war was really already on July 4th, 1773. The shooting war had already begun. And it really traced back to that late autumn, early winter night in 1773 when a group of anti-globalization protesters decided to take on the world's largest military machine and the world's largest transnational corporation. You'll recall the Tea Act of 1773. A lot of us studied it in school. As the Encyclopedia Britannica, the British Encyclopedia, points out in their online edition, the 2001 online edition, the 1773 Tea Act was a legislative maneuver by the British Ministry of Lord North to make English tea marketable in America by helping the East India Company quickly sell 17 million pounds of tea stored in England. End of quote. This was a tax cut.
The Tea Act of 1773 that caused the American colonists to scream no taxation without representation was a corporate tax cut. I actually tracked down a copy of the only surviving eyewitness report of the Boston Tea Party. It's published in 1834, only once, by George Robert Twelvetree Hughes, who was actually there. He was a teenager. He was a member of the, well, here's the title of the book, Retrospect of the Boston Tea Party, with a memoir by George R.T. Hughes, a survivor of the little band of patriots who drowned the tea in Boston Harbor in 1773. He waited 50 years to publish his story because they had all sworn an oath of silence because what they had done could get all of them thrown in prison. His is the only firsthand account that we have. And he, you know, he tells the story of this, and it's really quite remarkable. He says the Tea Act, this giant corporate tax cut, he says the East India, I'm quoting now from George Hughes, who was there at the Boston Tea Party. He says, the East India Company, however, received permission to transport tea free of all duty, it's free of all taxes, from Great Britain to America, allowing it to wipe out its small competitors and take over the tea business in all of America. Hence, it was no longer the small vessels of private merchants who went to vend tea for their own account in the ports of the colonies, but on the contrary, ships of an enormous burthen that transported immense quantities of this commodity. The colonies were now arrived at the decisive moment when they must cast the die and determine their course. He talks then about how there were actually folks in Britain who were encouraging America to separate. And then he says the first confrontation between the colonists and the corporation appeared as if it would happen in Pennsylvania and New York. At Philadelphia, writes Hughes, those to whom the teas of the East India Company were intended to be consigned were induced by persuasion or constrained by menaces to promise on no terms to accept the proffered consignment. At New York, Captain Sears and McDougal, daring and enterprising men, effected a concert of will against the East India Company between the smugglers, the merchants, and the Sons of Liberty, who had all joined forces and in most cases were the same people. Pamphlets suitable to the conjecture were daily distributed, and nothing was left unattempted by popular leaders to obtain their purpose. End of quote. The broad consensus here was that the boycotts and acts of civil disobedience would be enough to make the British rescind the tax breaks and the rebates that they were giving the East India Company so that it could sell tea below the market value and wipe out its small entrepreneurial competitors. But as newspapers began to expose the way the East India Company had used monopoly control in other nations, where it had put all the local small companies out of business, anger arose. Consider, for example, this pamphlet, which appeared on trees and buildings all over Philadelphia and Boston in the fall of 1773. It was titled The Alarm and signed by an enigmatic patriot who only called himself Rusticus. To this day, we have no idea who Rusticus actually was. He said, are we in like manner to be given up to the disposal of the East India Company, who now have the assurance to step forth in aid of the minister to execute his plan of enslaving America? Now keep in mind, this is a corporate enslavement of America they're talking about. Their conduct in Asia, he's talking about the East India Company, their conduct in Asia for some years past has given simple proof how little they regard the laws of nations, the rights, liberties, or lives of men. They levied war, excited rebellions, dethroned lawful princes, and sacrificed millions for the sake of profit. The revenues of mighty kingdoms have centered in their coffers. And these not being sufficient to glut their avarice, they have, by the most unparalleled barbarities, extortions and monopolies, stripped the miserable inhabitants of their property and reduced entire nations to indigence and ruin. 1,500,000, it is said, perished by famine in 1 year, not because the earth denied its fruits, but because this company and their servants engulfed all the necessities of life and set them at so high a price that the poor could not purchase them. So you get it, that the patriots in 1773 who stood up to this huge multinational corporation, the East India Company, and the giant army and navy that backed it up, the British war machine, that they were saying, enough, enough. We are not going to be to be serfs. We're not going to be vassals any longer. In Boston, George Robert 12-3 Hughes wrote, the general voice declared the time was come to face the storm. Now is the time to prove our courage or be disgraced with our brethren of the other colonies who have their eyes fixed upon us and will be prompt in their succor if we show ourselves faithful and firm. He says this was the voice of the Bostonians in 1773. The factors who were to be the consignees of the tea were urged to renounce their agency, but they refused and took refuge in the fortress. And the company that was supposed to receive the tea said, hey, we're still going to take the tea. So he writes, a guard was placed on Griffin's Wharf, near where the tea ships were moored. It was agreed that a strict watch should be kept, that if any insult should be offered, the bell should be immediately rung. And some persons already to bear intelligence of what might happen to the neighboring towns and to call in the assistance of the country people. May 27, 1773, Rusticus published a pamphlet. Resolve, therefore, nobly resolve, and publish to the world your resolutions that no man will receive the tea, no man will let his stores or suffer the vessel that brings it to moor at his wharf, and that if any person assists at unloading, landing, or storing it, he shall ever be deemed an enemy to his country and never be employed by his fellow citizens. In October 27, 1773, a new edition of the Alarm, Rusticus, it hath now been proved to you that the East India Company obtained the monopoly of that trade by bribery and corruption, that the power of this obtained they have prostituted to extortion and other the most cruel and horrible purposes the sun ever had beheld. On the 28th of November, 1773, writes Hughes, the ship Dartmouth with 112 chests arrived. The next morning after, the following notice was widely circulated. Friends, brethren, countrymen, that worst of plagues, the detested tea, has arrived in this harbor. The hour of destruction, a manly opposition to the machinations of tyranny, stares you in the face. Every friend of his country, to himself and to posterity, is now called upon to meet in Faneuil Hall at 9 o'clock this day, at which time the bells will ring, to make a united and successful resistance to this last, worst, and most destructive measure of administration. So here now, we're moving into December of 1773. It's the 16th of December. If you go back and you read Jefferson's writings, prior to this date, he had written a piece that was published in early 1773, called The Rights of British Americans, or no, it had a longer title than that. But essentially it was How to Be a Good Citizen of England, or of the United Kingdom, while living here in North America. There was not a large consensus in favor of separation from England. This was the event that brought it about, the Boston Tea Party. So Robert 12-3 Hughes, he writes, and he was there. Again, he was a teenager, he was a member of the group who threw the tea into the harbor. One of only two people that we actually know was there. He says, things thus appear to be hastening to a disastrous issue. The people of the country arrived in great numbers. The inhabitants of the town assembled. This assembly, which was on the 16th of December, 1773, was the most numerous ever known, there being more than 2,000 people from the country present. Then it was resolved that the tea should be returned to the place from whence it came in all events, and no duty paid thereon. The arrival of other cargoes of tea soon after increased the agitation of the public mind. He goes on, finding no measures were likely to be taken, either by the governor or the commander or owners of the ship, to return their cargoes. At 5 o'clock, a vote was called for the dissolution of the meeting and obtained. The Boston Tea Party was on. And thus began the separation of the United States of America from the United Kingdom. All brought about because a multinational corporation was wiping out small companies in North America. All because of the economic, essentially prostitution of a government to a huge multinational corporation. All because the government had been taken over, for all practical purposes, by this huge corporation, the government of England, and the satellite governments here in what was then the colonies, the British colonies. And the Patriots said, no. We want a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Not of the corporations, by the corporations, and for the corporations. And that's what they thought they were creating in this nation. 45 minutes past the hour.
country singers Bruce Robeson and Kelly Willis.
We had a gig in half an hour.
But with my allergies, I wasn't all there. I just couldn't sing.
I told her, you need Claritin D.
So I got Claritin Clear. Claritin D relieved my worst symptoms, even congestion and sinus pressure, fast, and I wasn't drowsy.
Told you, nothing works stronger, faster, or longer.
Find Claritin D on shelf or at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed among non-drowsy oral 24-hour OTC allergy products.
Live Claritin Clear.
Looking for a reason to try online dating? Match.com has 15 million of them, with our 15 million members. And now, here's one more.
You do want to make a good first impression. You do want to step up and put your best foot forward.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
Some efforts to breed fish might turn out new generations that are vulnerable to disease. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Government agencies raise a lot of fish in hatcheries that will be released later into the wild. If they don't pay close attention to the genetic makeup of the parent generation, the younger ones might have difficulty surviving and reproducing. Tony Goldberg is a research veterinarian at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says wild fish often have genetic qualities that give them special advantages in specific bodies of water. Hatcheries often breed fish that come from different places, and Goldberg says mixing up the genetic pools can compromise the survival of the young.
Wild fish, even though they may look the same across broad geographic areas, can be very adapted to their local conditions. A fish from one river system or one lake system may be uniquely adapted to that river and that lake and the ecological conditions there. And if it's then brought into captivity and the progeny of those fish are released somewhere else, then the genes that they bring with them may not be optimal for the new environment.
Goldberg says interbreeding can compromise the offspring. The young fish might have more trouble than native fish surviving in the wild, and they also might be more vulnerable to disease. Goldberg says interbreeding also can weaken the immune system of the offspring.
And because the immune system is such a wonderfully complex system, disrupting the genes in that system, even a little bit, might have far-reaching effects on the ability of an animal to fend off infection.
Goldberg says hatcheries would do well to pay more attention to the origins and genetic makeup of the fish they choose as parents to improve the survival of their offspring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
If you're a diabetic, you'll want to listen to this message from the Diabetes Line. If you call us today, you may be able to get your testing supplies delivered right to your door with no out-of-pocket costs. We have all the supplies you'll ever need, and getting those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your door is as easy as calling this number. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254. If you have Medicare or private insurance, you might be able to get those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your home with no out-of-pocket cost. We even file all the claim forms so you never have to wait for those reimbursement checks. If you're a diabetic and you want testing supplies delivered right to your door, call the Diabetes Line 24 hours a day. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you live on the 4th of July. Special thanks to Dan Jacobs and Alex Goldmark in New York City for showing up and doing a live show with us today and,
and to you for listening. 56 people signed the Declaration of Independence on this day 230 years ago. It's also, by the way, the day some years later, within a few hours of each other, that John Adams, the second president of the United States, and Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States, both died. Jefferson died about 2 hours before Adams, although Adams' last words were, "Thomas Jefferson still lives." They had been close friends in the early days. They worked to bring about the American Revolution. They then became political enemies. Adams was a staunch, what we call a conservative in today's parlance, a Federalist at the time. Jefferson was what was called a Republican then. He founded what was the Democratic Republican Party, which in the 1830s dropped the word Republican from its name and is still today known as the Democratic Party, the longest-lasting, oldest political party in the history of civilization. The Democratic Party, founded by Thomas Jefferson. The 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, politicians, doctors, Protestant ministers, merchants, nine of them were farmers. By today's standards, none of them were truly rich. Land didn't have that much value back then. You'll recall that both George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson died in bankruptcy. Washington died without, he didn't have enough money to free his slaves, which was one of his most ardent wishes when he died. The signers wrote, even John Hancock, by the way, who was the wealthiest of all of them, was, you know, in today's money, worth maybe $500,000-$700,000. He was not rich. He was not Bill Gates wealthy. These men were the most idealistic and determined among the colonists. When they, at the very end of the Declaration of Independence, they wrote, "We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor." And this was just a simple statement of fact. The day they signed that document, 230 years ago today, each legally became a traitor and was sentenced to death for treason by the legal government that controlled their lands and their homes. As Ben Franklin pointed out, they stood at a point of no return, and indeed, to quote Franklin, "Indeed, we must all hang together, otherwise we shall most assuredly hang separately." When Rhode Island Stephen Hopkins signed the document, he remarked to his friend William Ellery that, quote, "My hand trembles, but my heart does not." But Virginia's Benjamin Harrison, who weighed nearly 300 pounds, commented to Massachusetts's Eldridge Gerry, a short, thin man, quote, "With me, the hanging will be over in a minute, but you'll be dancing on the air for an hour after I'm gone." John Hancock signed his name large enough that the king could, quote, "read my name without glasses and can now double the reward," end quote, of 500 pounds that had already been put on Hancock's head for sedition. Just 6 months later, John Hancock would lose his newborn daughter to complications of childbirth arising from his wife's fleeing the oncoming British army. Thomas Nelson of Virginia signed the Declaration of Independence when he and George Washington attacked the British in Nelson's hometown. The British had seized Nelson's house. British General Cornwallis taking it as his headquarters, and he encouraged George Washington to attack his own home. The house was destroyed, and after the war, Nelson, unable to repay loans he'd taken out against it to help finance the revolution, lost his property and died in poverty at the age of 50. Signer William Ellery of Rhode Island similarly lost everything, as did Virginia's Carter Braxton and Benjamin Harrison, Pennsylvania's George Clymer, New York's Philip Livingston, Georgia's Lyman Hall, and New Jersey's Francis Hopkinson. Everyone died in poverty, each one of those men, as a result of having signed the Declaration of Independence 230 years ago this day. The British destroyed New York's Francis Lewis's property and threw his wife into such a hellhole of a jail that she died there 2 years later. Three of South Carolina's four signers, Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward Jr., and Arthur Middleton, were captured by the British and held in a filthy, unheated prison and brutally tortured for over a year. New Jersey farmer John Hart's wife died shortly after he signed the Declaration of Independence, and his 13 children were scattered among sympathetic families to hide them from the British and conservative loyalists. John Hart never again saw his children, dying alone and racked with grief 3 years later. Altogether, 17 of the 56 men who met in that room to sign the Declaration of Independence were entirely wiped out by the war they declared. New Jersey State Supreme Court Justice Richard Stockton took his wife and children into hiding after he signed the Declaration, but conservatives loyal to the Crown turned them in. He was so badly beaten and starved in the British prison that he died before the war was over. His home was looted, and his wife and children lived the rest of their lives as paupers. Altogether, 9 of the men in that room died, and 4 lost their children as a direct result of putting their names to the Declaration of Independence. Every single one of those 56 men had to flee his home, and after the war, 12 returned to find only rubble. After the war was over and the conservatives had fled to Canada and England, the survivors of the new American nation met to put into final form the legal structure of the nation they had just birthed. It was not to be a nation of cynical, selfish libertarians who believed the highest value was individual freedom and independence from society, or that the greatest motivator was greed. It was not to be a kingdom ruled by a warlord elite. It was not to be a theocracy. It was to be, as Ben Franklin said, a republic, if you can keep it. Happy 4th of July. We'll be back after the news. Tom Hartman here with you. Our number 866-440-8466. Why did the Founding Fathers think the Indians have outdone the Romans? I'll tell you all about that right after this.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Were you lucky enough to get an iPod for Christmas? If you did, now maybe you need some accessories. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics. We're the largest Apple dealer in New England, and we've got iPod accessories coming out of our... Oops. We've got a lot of iPod accessories, like the Small Dog Groove Cube, a portable pair of speakers for your iPod, which cost only $29.95, or the HipPod, a hip-attaching carrying case with external speakers for $25. Stay warm this winter in a Burton iPod jacket. For the family, maybe it's time for a home theater system. We bundle a Mac Mini, THX sound system, and an LCD projector. It's adjustable up to 300 inches diagonal for only $1,400.
Visit smalldog.com or call them at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-MACS. Tell them Tom Hartman sent you.
Hey, that's a great idea. You could really cash in.
I hope. I've been working on it for years.
Have you got a patent on it?
Not yet. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I need.
Just call Inventec. They can help you protect and market your idea. They've been doing it for inventors for over 10 years. It's easy.
Inventec? That's exactly what I need.
Then call 1-800-319-1818.
Slow down.
That's 1-800-319-1818. And they'll even send you a free inventor's kit and DVD with your confidential submission.
How do you know this?
I called them myself. I have a really good idea of my own, and thanks to Inventec, no one's going to cash in but me. They're going to help me get my invention off the drawing board and into the marketplace.
I really need Inventec. What's that number again?
1-800-319-1818.
One more time?
Call 1-800-319-1818. That's 1-800-319-1818.
Air America Radio News. I'm Emily Hoffman. Bush is making the rounds today, continuing to defend his war on this July 4th. This while anti-war groups are staging a hunger strike in protest. The demonstration was organized by Code Pink, a women's anti-war group that says it wants to highlight the human cost of the war in which more than 2,500 U.S. soldiers and thousands of Iraqis have died. About 150 protesters sat in front of the White House yesterday to savor their last meal before starting a fast that some say they will continue until American troops return from Iraq. Monstrous and inhuman, that's how the Iraqi justice minister is describing the alleged rape and murder of a young Iraqi woman and the killing of her family by former Army Private Stephen Green. Justice Minister Hashim Abdul Rahman al-Shadli is demanding that the UN Security Council ensure that Green and other soldiers involved are punished. The March 12th attack was among the worst in a series of cases of U.S. troops accused of killing and abusing Iraqi civilians. Green appeared in federal court in Charlotte, North Carolina yesterday to face murder and rape charges. No quick answer from Iran about its nuclear program. Tehran insisted today that it will come up with a formal response by mid-August to a Western package of incentives for it to suspend its nuclear enrichment program, writing in this week's New Yorker magazine. Seymour Hersh says the question is whether the administration really expects the Iranians to agree, or is it laying the diplomatic groundwork for future military action? Hersh says Bush does not have the support of senior military commanders who have told him that a bombing campaign will probably not succeed in destroying Iran's nuclear program, and that an attack could lead to serious economic, political, and military consequences for the United States. Discovery's astronauts are strapped into their seats and the hatches sealed in preparation for NASA's first Independence Day shuttle liftoff. After two weather delays and a debate over safety, officials decided the launch should go ahead. And retailers are hoping July 4th sales will attract the crowds, but watch out for those maxed out credit cards. The American Bankers Association says late payments on credit cards ticked up in the first quarter because people are squeezed by rising interest rates and higher gas prices. Air America Radio.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice. Need an idea for dinner tonight? Rediscover home cooking with Mahatma and Carolina Rice and make old ideas new again. For easy to prepare recipe videos, visit them on the web.
Hello, and welcome back to Ask the Orkin Man.
Hey, Orkin Man. I think termites are destroying my kid's wood swing set.
Oh, that's not good. What makes you think it's termites?
I don't know. The swings are lower.
But are you sure your kids aren't just taller?
Even the baby's got skin knees.
Oh.
No, my house could be next.
Could be. Those little foragers can travel over 100 feet.
Duh, it's only 30 to the house.
Don't worry. One of our experts can treat these and help prevent more in the future.
Thanks, Orkin Guy.
Man.
Bye, man.
For a free inspection, just call
1-800-ORKIN-MAN.
The IRS put a lien on my house, garnished my wages, and levied my bank account. My attorney referred me to Associated Tax Relief. Calling them was the best move I ever made. They got us a settlement we can live with.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Associated Tax Relief can help you. Associated Tax Relief has helped taxpayers settle their tax debt with the IRS for mere pennies on the dollar.
Call Associated Tax Relief for a free consultation. 888-214-1906.
Associated Tax Relief got the IRS to accept a fraction of what we owe.
This is your opportunity to get a fresh start. Associated Tax Relief's attorneys, accountants, and tax preparers can help settle your tax debt for pennies on the dollar.
Call Associated Tax Relief for a free consultation. 888-214-1906.
The IRS is offering you a one-time opportunity to pay your tax debt for less than what you owe.
Call Associated Tax Relief for a free consultation. 888-214-1906.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to help solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-661-0491.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. They don't go away on their own. The IRS can attach your wages, your pension, your savings, even your Social Security checks. If you owe back taxes, don't despair. Since 1997, our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-661-0491 now. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-661-0491. That's 800-661-0491.
Attention! If you do not have health insurance, have limited health insurance, or are uninsurable and are worried about the cost of health care, this announcement is for you. For less than $2 a day, your entire family can save thousands of dollars on all medical expenses thanks to Synergy Health. With more than 600,000 providers around the country, Synergy Health can save you up to 60% on doctors, hospitals, hearing, vision, prescriptions, and even dental care. Plus, you'll get great savings on chiropractic, alternate medicine, and much more. And here's the best part. Synergy Health offers guaranteed acceptance to everyone, no matter what your health history or income, at the same low price. Call our 800 number and learn how Synergy Health is helping families like yours for less than
than $2 a day. There is no obligation, and the information is free.
Call 1-800-933-2596 for free information. That's 1-800-933-2596. There's absolutely no obligation.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and AirAmericaRadio.com, and CRN Digital. Our founding fathers, sometimes, sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
You're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync, and thinks that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Could it be that everything you know about the founding fathers is wrong? Dr. Robert Hieronymus is with us. His book, Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, the website secretdestiny.org. Dr. Hieronymus, welcome to the program.
Great joy to be on, and hello from my wife, Sahara, who's interviewed you a couple of times.
Oh, great. Great. Well, I'm very pleased to have you with us here, sir. Things just got scrambled for a second. Tell me about, first of all, I'm curious what your take is on the goddess Columbia.
Oh, the goddess Columbia.
She's on top of the Capitol building. She was on our coinage up until the 1930s or 40s.
Well, no doubt there are certain fundamentalists that would think that's satanic. However, the goddess Columbia, or the soul, I like to take it back to its archetypal reference, if I can do that with the work of looking into the work of, say, Joseph Campbell or Carl Gustav Jung, any of those guys. I would say that you could look at it from the standpoint of the soul, and you can look at it from the standpoint also of the Native Americans, because I believe the Native Americans, especially the League of the Iroquois Indians, had an enormous influence upon the founding fathers, and unfortunately most Americans are unaware of that. And some of them became aware of it in 1990 when President Bush and Bill Clinton joined for one moment in time with proclamations that it was the League of the Iroquois Indians that helped the founding fathers establish our Constitution and patterning our Constitution somewhat after their work. Of course, there were other influences from Europe and the Age of Reason and all that, but one of the major influences is the League of the Iroquois, five nations and later six, who had a constitutional republic as early as about anywhere from 1000 to 1400 A.D., that's before Columbus got here, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty remarkable stuff. I remember, thinking, I'd seen references in Jefferson's writing and whatnot to the idea that America should have a goddess, because there were certainly a lot of gods around there, and to the extent that we were patterning after in some of his thought, I suppose the Greeks as well, the Greeks and the Romans, the Roman Republic, they had goddesses, and America should have a goddess, and the goddess Columbia had her own district.
Yes.
The District of Columbia. And I remember the morning that I woke up and picked up the newspaper, and this was 5 years ago, more or less, and here's this headline, this huge headline, Columbia dies over Texas. And I thought, oh, my God, George Bush has finally killed the goddess. And it was, in fact, the story of the spaceship Columbia breaking up. But how ironic, that Columbia died over Texas. In any case,
it's quite symbolic and archetypal.
I thought so. I still
synchronistic
think so.
Even.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you certainly are. It still gives me the creeps.
That stuff gives me the creeps, especially because, the League of the Iroquois and many of the Native American societies were matriarchal matrilineal traditions, and that women had a major part, especially within the league, in controlling the government. They were, by and large, the protectors of the government. They voted the chiefs in, they could vote them out, and they owned most, if not all, of the property, if one can own property within the Native American tradition. I'm sorry to butt in there, but it's a real important, especially in regards when you take a look at America's symbols that were chosen, the pyramid and the eye and the triangle.
Yeah, now tell us about that, Robert.
Well, you know, there are so many... back in the old days when you heard, there were 50 of the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence that were members of secret societies such as the Freemasons, I thought that was pretty interesting. But later on, of course, in my own doctoral research, and I learned what others did, that there were only 9 of the founding fathers that were members of Freemasonry.
Now, what about that engraving that I've seen in the Smithsonian of the Mason parade? After the, I believe it was after the ratification of the Constitution. I could be wrong, but it was, you know, very early on.
Well, Freemasons had a lot to do with our, much of the beliefs of our founding fathers were totally in sync with the Freemasonry along those lines. So it's not that they didn't play a part, they did. But there's been an overemphasis upon the Freemasons when they were just part of it. The real element of it was the League of the Iroquois Indians, and that pyramid in the eye and the triangle, which Christian fundamentalists, and I don't know, maybe Bush himself, believed is satanic. And it deals with, as far as they're concerned, the control of the government over us. And it has nothing at all to do with that.
So where did this come from? It's on our dollar bills.
Well, it came from a lot of misunderstanding. You mean where did that belief come from?
Where did the Great Seal of the United States come from?
Well, there were 3 committees that formed to design the Great Seal of the United States. The first in 1776 had Thomas Jefferson. God, what a man. Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. Now, that's a committee. I mean, that's a heck of a committee.
Yeah.
But all of the ideas that Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and Adams had were rejected. And there was only one of the 3 was a Freemason. Now, many of those...
Which one?
Benjamin Franklin. Uh-huh. He was a member for at least 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Where many of those who believed that Freemasonry was trying to take over the world, when they took a look at the elements in the reverse of the Great Seal, they said, aha, there it is. It's that eye in the triangle. I knew it all the time. The Freemasons were going to ruin this country, control this country. They were going to control the world. Well, that's kind of interesting, especially from a wonderful philanthropic organization that's having a hard enough time controlling, whether or not it can continue to exist through its philanthropies, its hospitals, and all that.
That being the Masons, yeah.
That being the Masons, correct. But when you look into the symbol of the reverse of the Great Seal, it tells a very powerful story on many different levels, because all symbols have multiple levels of meaning. Some say 3, some say up to 7 different levels altogether.
Well, we only have 2 minutes left, Robert Hieronymus. Cut right to the chase here.
All right. Looking at it archetypal, you see the sun over the pyramid. That is, the eye in the triangle really is a symbol of an archetype of the sun. The pyramid is a symbol of a breast. We can say breast on your radio program?
Yes.
All right. So that's mom. You got a combination here of consciousness and super consciousness coming together. Mom and dad coming together. All human beings are both male and female. And one of us, the male, a certain gene predominates, and the other a female. Okay, so it's the balance. It's the coming together of unconsciousness, consciousness, which leads to superconsciousness, a balance. I think the story that they were leaving us, an extraordinary, powerful story, is that we need to have balance in our lives. The male aspect of activity, the female aspect of preserving and containing, etc., not controlling. And I think that when you see above it, and we kept this, God favors this process. That's a heck of a process. Self-transformation, as Maslow and Jung called it, individuation, whatever name you want to give it. It is self-empowerment. And that's what the founding fathers were relating to us in symbolic terms. They were brilliant men. They made mistakes. No one's perfect, obviously. But they allowed us an insight as to who we are. Every human being has an immortal component. If you make contact with your immortal component through prayer, through meditation, and then serve what you learn through meditation and prayer, I believe we become better individuals.
So, Dr. Robert Hieronymus, SecretDestiny.org, author of Founding Fathers Secret Societies, you're suggesting that the founders were not the fundamentalist Christians that they are made out to be by the revisionist historians on the right now, but rather were esoteric kind of New Agers?
Yeah, well, they were humanists in the old sense. They were Renaissance schooled from that standpoint. They knew that we were much more than physical bodies and that we had to use that contact with our soul to elevate our awareness, which allows you then to serve others locally, nationally, internationally. All you got your choice.
So our nation was built on the idea of, or created on the idea of service and community, not on the idea of individual selfishness libertarian acquisition.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective, fascinating perspective. Dr. Robert Hieronymus, he's the author of Founding Fathers, Secret Societies. He's also a historian and host of 21st Century Radio. You can check it all out at his website, secretdestiny.org. Dr. Hieronymus, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
And happy 4th of July to
happy
you, sir.
Happy 4th.
Thank you. It's 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America.
A good news story from AliveGoodNews.com.
I'm passionate about two things, motorcycles and my grandchildren. But for the past 3 years, I've suffered from arthritis. The pain caused me to lose strength in my arms, and I couldn't pick up my grandchildren. My doctor suggested I try Aleve, and I definitely noticed the difference. With the pain gone, I've got the energy to pick up my grandchildren and have fun. It's fantastic.
Aleve invites you to share your good news at AliveGoodNews.com.
Use it directed for minor arthritis pain.
Country singers Bruce Robeson and Kelly Willis.
We had a gig in half an hour.
But with my allergies, I wasn't all there. I just couldn't sing.
I told her, you need Claritin D.
So I got Claritin Clear. Claritin D relieved my worst symptoms, even congestion and sinus pressure, fast. And I wasn't drowsy.
Told you, nothing works stronger, faster, or longer.
Find Claritin D on shelf or at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed among non-drowsy oral 24-hour OTC allergy products.
Live Claritin Clear.
Do you have one of those really good jobs in which your pay is automatically raised every single year by nearly $4,000? And the only way your pay hike can be withheld is if you choose not to accept it. You won't find these jobs in the Help Wanted ads, friends. You find them in Congress. Once again, our Congress creditors have generously bestowed a pay hike on themselves, raising their total annual take to $168,500 apiece. These are the same people who have refused to raise America's poverty-level minimum wage for 10 years and who have shown no concern for the majority of American working families whose wages have not even kept up with the rising cost of living. This month, House members voted for the 8th year in a row to up their own pay. In a little game of political dodgeball, congressional leaders of both parties run an insider scam that makes their pay raises automatic, unless they magnanimously vote to block it. Guess what? They don't. For 8 straight years, these statesmen have grabbed the money and run. Speaking of running, both parties' leaders have cut a secret Save the Incumbents pact, agreeing that their candidates will not use the pay raise as an issue in the fall elections. And you thought there was no bipartisanship left on Capitol Hill. Members tried to dismiss the pay hikes as a trivial sum, merely enough to keep them ahead of inflation. Over the 8 years of steady raises, however, these cost-of-living adjustments, as Congress likes to call them, have added a total of $32,000 to their paychecks. That's more than the annual income of most Americans, and it further isolates our Congress critters from the harsh economic reality being faced today by the great majority of people they supposedly represent. This is Jim Hightower saying, shouldn't at least one party be campaigning to bring Congress down to earth, starting with ending this soft cushion of automatic pay raises?
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing?
On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder, millions of jobs are being exported, and now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout, America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
And welcome back. You're smack dab in the middle of a vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot going on. Nick Kristof in today's New York Times, the 4th of July edition. Nicholas Kristof, the op-ed editorialist writer for the New York Times, pointing out how the real victims of the lies and distortions in Fox News that led up to the war in Iraq, and frankly, I would say, the lies and distortions that appeared in the New York Times, the articles by Judith Miller, in which she was repeating the information that the administration was feeding her, that the real victims were not the liberals. They were the conservatives who believed it, who believed this stuff. That was thus the real tragedy. It was also reported today in the New York Times that the CIA unit, the special division, this department inside the CIA that was put together during the Bill Clinton administration to track down, to hunt down and find and or kill Osama bin Laden, was disbanded by George W. Bush a year ago. The CIA no longer officially having a separate department that's out there looking for Osama bin Laden. Michael Scheuer, the guy who was anonymous, you know, writing the kind of tell-all books about the CIA, he was the founder, he was the first head of that department, the guy who was the first, the senior CIA official, he was the first head of that, you know, get bin Laden unit. And he says this is a terrible mistake to think that bin Laden is no longer a potent force. Also, it's been revealed that George W. Bush was the guy who told Dick Cheney to take down Joe Wilson. George W. Bush, apparently, the senior administration official. This according to Bush's own testimony before the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald.
And I don't know. We're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, well, according to the New York Times today, George W. Bush was the guy who said to Dick Cheney, discredit Joe Wilson. And Dick Cheney said to Scooter Libby, discredit Joe Wilson, and Scooter Libby outed Joe Wilson's wife. Apparently, that's the sequence. We know now for sure that Bush told Cheney to do it. Now, at the same time, this article points out that Bush did not say to Cheney, out his wife. And Cheney apparently did not say to Scooter Libby, out his wife. So what we have here is like something out of The Godfather. I remember when Lamar Waldron and I, if you've heard George Norrie's show overnight, I know Lamar was on the program last night. Next, on the 17th, I think, of this month, of July, the Discovery Channel is going to replay our program about our book, Ultimate Sacrifice. A look at the years, really, the years 60-61 through 63. And interviewing Frank Regano. Frank Regano was the lawyer for Santo Trafficante. Santo Trafficante, the mob boss, the Florida mob boss, the Miami-based mob boss, who was kind of the capo de capo, you know, he was the head mafia guy in the United States. He was the guy behind the French Connection, you know, the importing of all that heroin. He was the guy who went up to New York the day that Albert Anastasio was machine gunned to death in a barber shop. Remember these? That was Trafficante. See, his lawyer, Frank Regano, he tells us this story. Jimmy Hoffa is freaking out because Bobby Kennedy's prosecuting him, trying to put him in prison. Hoffa comes to Marcello, Carlos Marcello, the mob boss of Louisiana, all the way to Texas, all the way to Dallas, and Trafficante with $1 million in a suitcase and says, "You've got to kill Bobby Kennedy." And Trafficante says, "You know, you cut the tail off a dog, it just turns around and bites it. You're going to kill the dog, you cut off its head." And everybody walked out of the meeting knowing that the execution of Jack Kennedy had just been ordered, but nobody had said it. And this is, you know, this is very much like George W. Bush saying to Dick Cheney, discredit this guy Wilson. He didn't have to say, "Hey, take out his wife." All he had to say was, "You know, discredit this guy. We got a mob boss as president, and another one as vice president. I mean, they're behaving like the mafia." And where's the outrage in the United States about this? Where's the outrage in the media? I am baffled. I think it's because the media, frankly, have become such lapdogs to this administration. They are so afraid of losing access, and they're so, well. We have a small problem with our media in this country. Not one that can't be repaired, however. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back on the 4th of July.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, "Whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it." And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Looking for a reason to try online dating? Match.com has 15 million of them, with our 15 million members. And now, here's one more.
You do want to make a good first impression. You do want to step up and put your best foot forward.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
Get the good stuff.
Want to know the two secrets to extending the life of your vehicle? Get your oil changed every 3,000 miles and only use high-quality oil filters like the Napa Gold Oil Filter. It traps 45% more dirt than the leading brands. And now, when you buy two Napa Gold Oil Filters at your local Napa Auto Parts store, you'll get a Napa Filters 40th Anniversary hat free. It's only at participating Napa stores and only good while supplies last. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
You're listening to Win,
the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Northwest Airline flight attendants have less than 2 weeks to negotiate with airline management under threat of a bankruptcy judge's destruction of their labor contracts. The court has granted Northwest the right to destroy the contract, but it put a 14-day stay on the decision. If the union doesn't reach an agreement, Northwest can impose its terms on the union. As Northwest's flight attendants struggle with that, they're also voting on switching their union representation. That voting ends July 6th. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is seeking to represent the flight attendants, replacing the Professional Flight Attendants Association at Northwest. Pat Friend, AFA CWA president, says Northwest flight attendants need the resources and experience of her union to get through this difficult time.
Nearly all of the workers at the Port of Oakland are now unionized after more than 200 workers voted in favor of organizing last week. The International Federation of Technical and Professional Engineers will now represent workers who in the past have typically filled the void when other unions at the port have gone on strike. The union represents many employees in management roles at the port. The average salary of the workers joining the union is between $70,000 and $80,000 a year, and they receive full medical benefits. The drive for unionization began more than 6 weeks ago out of concern of a future where non-unionized port workers typically are targeted when it comes time to make budget cuts. Traditionally, union members do not cross the picket lines of other unions, an issue that concerns port management now that nearly all of the port employees are in labor unions.
Nurses at Robert Wood Johnson Hospital in New Jersey are trying to win language in their contract that would protect their union rights from an upcoming expected anti-worker NLRB decision. The nurses want to guard against losing their union rights under the Kentucky River decisions. Employers in that case are trying to get the NLRB to exclude many thousands of workers from union protection by expanding the definition of supervisors.
Pilots at UPS have reached a tentative agreement with the package company on a new contract. The tentative agreement comes after 3 years of strike threats and stonewalling. The union is reporting that the agreement includes work rule changes and improvements to wages and pensions that will expire in 2011. In December of 2005, the pilots had requested that the two sides be released from federal mediation so they would be free to strike. That request was refused. More than 2,500 pilots are represented by the Independent Pilots Association at UPS. Here is today's economic report. Consumer confidence took a hit in May as Americans tightened their belts to pay for rising fuel prices. While spending still grew slightly by 0.4%, the Commerce Department said there are signs of cooling. There was also slower growth in the area of income growth, a sign that tends to correspond with weaker job growth.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, I'm Robert Wagner with an important message for homeowners 62 years or older. If you own a home, you may be able to pay off your current mortgage or access the equity in your home without making any monthly loan payments. That's right, no monthly loan payments. A U.S. government-insured reverse mortgage allows you to convert the equity in your home into cash, giving you the financial independence you deserve. The tax-free proceeds won't affect Social Security or Medicare benefits, and you can use the money for almost any purpose you desire. The Senior Lending Network program has prepared a free educational video that explains how a reverse mortgage works, how to qualify, and how you can supplement your income without any monthly loan payments. If you're a homeowner 62 years or older, your free video is waiting. So call now.
For a free educational video from the Senior Lending Network on reverse mortgages, call 800-995-4290. 800-995-4290.
Senior Lending Network is a program by Mortgage Warehouse, licensed mortgage banker, New York State Banking Department. Callers' information will be shared with lenders who are members of the program. Consult your tax advisor regarding tax implications.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
When she was an American girl, raised on promises, she couldn't help thinking that there was a little more life somewhere else. After all, it was a great big world. With lots of
things. And welcome back to the radio home of democracy, the No Boring Zone. It's the Tom Hartman program on this 4th of July, 34 minutes past the hour. John Hopwood, he has met his fate. Here's this guy. He gets busted twice for going 40 in a 30-mile-per-hour zone. twice. And so he's going to go into court, and he's going to prove to the judge that he was actually going 40 in a 40-mile-per-hour zone. So what does he do? He goes out and he steals a 40-mile-per-hour speed limit sign. And in the middle of the night, goes to the place where he got stopped by the police and plants the thing. Didn't go over all that well. John Hopwood, 44. This was in England. Hazel Grove, Stockport. Busted. Moved the sign 10 miles to a road in Rochdale after he was caught by a speed camera twice in 2 days. He's given a sentence of 56 days in jail for moving his speed. What does that have to do with the 4th of July? Nothing. I just thought it was a great story. It's one of those ones I just couldn't pass up. By the way, I mentioned the media just before we went to the break. Last night, I don't recall whether it was when I was doing this program or when I was filling in for Randy Rhodes yesterday, but I was we were talking about the media, and it came around to a discussion about Clear Channel. And I made a joke about how Lenin, you know, said the definition of a capitalist is a man who will sell you the rope you're going to use to hang him. But the fact of the matter is, I was thinking about this last night, that this is really the same issue, this issue of the media. It's really fundamentally the same thing that I talk about when I talk about Walmart, that I'm not going to specifically criticize Walmart. Because they're playing the game by the rules. I mean, there are times when Walmart has broken the rules, you know, locking employees in overnight, stuff like that. They got busted for that, and they rightfully should. But by and large, Walmart is playing the game by the rules. By and large, General Electric, you know, with this giant defense contractor with this huge conglomerate, which includes NBC, they're playing by the rules. What they're doing is legal. What Clear Channel is doing is legal. What CBS is doing, what all of the media companies are doing is legal. And therefore, I don't think it's right, frankly, that we hold them up and say, oh, you know, bad company. And the reason I don't think it's right is not so much an issue of morality, but of practicality, because it's not about the individual companies. Companies are doing what companies are supposed to do. They're trying to grab as much market share as they can. They're trying to corner markets wherever they can. They're trying to make a profit. The problem is the rules. In my opinion, for example, with regard to media, we should go back to the rules that said if you're going to be a media company, be a media company, but you can't be a defense contractor. And Clear Channel, by the way, is just a media company. They're not a defense contractor, unlike GE. And I think that, you know, as I've said many times, the consolidation of media is something that should concern us all. And Ronald Reagan auctioning off the airwaves is something that should concern us all. And Reagan suspending the Fairness Doctrine and all the pieces associated with it should concern us all. And Bill Clinton signing the Telecommunications Act of 1996 should concern us all. These are all sellouts that have essentially destroyed the media. But it's not, and to some extent you could argue, okay, companies have lobbied for these things. Well, of course. But the fact of the matter is, elected officials have allowed these things to happen, and we're the ones, by and large, who have allowed them to continue it. And that's why it's important that we take some responsibility for this. That we individually wake up and get involved in the political process, that we individually speak up and say, you know, enough already. Whether it's the Walmart wiping out communities or whether it's GE, you know, inhaling the airwaves. And say, you know, we think the rules should be changed. It should be fine, you know, for companies to grow and to make a profit and all that sort of thing. It's fine. But when it reaches a point where it harms the prospects of democracy, then we collectively, we, this United States of America, we have a problem with that. But it's not about criticizing the individual companies. It's about, you know, it's about the rules of the game. Susan in St. Louis, Missouri. Our number, 1-866-440-8466. Hey, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. Happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th to you, too. Tom, speaking of the media, I have an idea, and I want to sort of throw this out to you and see what you think about it. If the media, which needs to be changed, still has to deal today with the situation, perhaps a better response to being locked out and being intimidated, so therefore they want access to the president, perhaps their better move would be to print the story of being locked out. In other words, don't let the president or this administration intimidate them. Write the story of being intimidated.
Well, Helen Thomas tried that.
So who has?
I mean, Helen Thomas, ever since John Kennedy was president, she always got the first question from the president because she represented the Associated Press, the wire service. And in Bush's first press conference, she asked him a couple of tough questions. He didn't like it. He gave the order that she was to be moved to the back of the room. She'd always sat in the front row. That she was to be moved to the back of the room and that she was never to be called on again. And she was and she wasn't. And she was moved back and she wasn't called on. And the Associated Press, after a reasonable interval, said, hey, why do we have somebody sitting there in the White House press room who's never going to be called on? And that was the end of Helen Thomas's career with the Associated Press. And that's the kind of, and that's no secret. I mean, that was widely reported in the media.
But, you know, Tom, maybe it has to be done on a more massive basis. In other words, the New York Times, which is now being intimidated or trying to be intimidated, you know, by the president. If they stood up as an organization and it went on their front page and it went in their editorials and they spoke about it repetitively, hey, this administration is locking us out, this is against the Constitution, and spoke about it over and over, she shouted it out to the world on the front page, maybe then another paper would do it, maybe another one would do it. I mean, someone's got to break the lock. Someone's got to stand up and scream. One person like Helen Thomas, as wonderful as she is not enough.
Yeah, I don't think more power,
but that's where the press would be doing their job. Well, because that's their job, tell the story.
Yeah, and the question is, at what point does the press say, okay, we've had enough? I mean, you know, when does their Howard Beale moment come?
Yeah.
When they say,
well,
you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going
to
take it anymore.
We have to do that, though. We have to stand up and say, hey, press, print the story of the truth. Tell us that you're being locked out.
Yeah.
Tell us that.
Good point, Susan. Thank you very much for the call. The other concern that I have, though, is that the news media in the United States has gone from being a news media, which we used to have. I mean, this is one of the places where I started in this business back in the late 60s. I was I did rock and roll for a while. I did country western music. I was a DJ for 3 years, and then I did news for 7 years. And I was a reporter out there on the beat, you know, in Lansing, Michigan, going down to the state capitol and interviewing the governor and the mayor and all that kind of, and as well as working in the newsroom, and ultimately after. At the end of 7 years, I was a program director, so I've kind of had every job in this business. And I can tell you, back then, back in the early 70s, the radio station that I was working at in Lansing, Michigan, was probably losing money on its news operation. I mean, there were five of us in the news department for, you know, one radio station in a market of, you know, the size of probably 200,000, 300,000 people. They couldn't have been making money on the news operation. They did that. They had that news operation, and we did that news because the FCC required radio stations to be serving the public good. And the main way that you serve the public good, the community service that you did, wasn't by running the announcement, the community announcement about the, you know, the yard sale at the local church. It was by offering news. Networks had news departments that produced news. And the people who did the news were not highly paid. Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, these guys didn't become multi-mega millionaires. They weren't, you know, like the Katie Couric's, you know, the $14 million kind. Come on! And they weren't viewed as stars. There was the news. The news divisions were losing money. CBS's news division was always losing money. They had it because they knew that their television stations had to, and their radio stations that were carrying their network feeds, had to have news in order to keep their licenses. And so it was a cost of doing business. And when Reagan in 87 set aside the Fairness Doctrine, and by the way, I'm not advocating for a return of the Fairness Doctrine where, you know, if I say something on the radio about Canada A, then later I have to say something about Canada B. I'm not suggesting that we should go back to that. I mean, as I said, I was in radio in the 70s. There was a one-hour talk show in the afternoon on the station that I was on WITL in Lansing, Michigan. And because of the Fairness Doctrine, we talked more about, you know, how do you keep crabgrass from growing in your lawn than about politics. I don't think that it was a good thing, frankly. But there were a whole bunch of pieces associated with the Fairness Doctrine that got knocked down when Reagan set all that stuff aside in 87. And one of the main ones, and then this got put into law in 96 when Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, one of the main ones was the idea of providing community service, providing news. So now what's happened is that the people who are doing news aren't doing news anymore. They're doing infotainment because now the news divisions are not about providing community service in order that radio television stations can maintain their licenses. Instead, they're about offering the appearance of news, the appearance of information, so that they can get ratings, so that they can sell advertising, so that they can make more money. And stories about missing white girls in Aruba or rapes by university lacrosse teams are going to pull more eyeballs than stories about what's really going on in the world. They're going to pull more eyeballs than stories about the number three guy. Whatever happened to Dusty Fago, the number three guy at the CIA, being busted for his association with defense contractors? Or stories of corruption. And that's the other part of the problem, is that the news reporters have become superstars, and they don't want to give up these 6 and 7 and 8 figure salaries by taking on government and ending up looking on the outside looking in like Helen Thomas did. They're afraid of losing it. They're stars now. 45 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Charlie Pickett here for Amdro. Now, I don't know anybody that likes ants. That's why you need to know about Amdro Ant Block. Ant Block keeps ants out of your house, and it wipes them out where they live, outside. Just sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the foundation of your home. You see, Ant Block's a bait. Ants take it back to the colony where they share it and die, even the queen. Amdro Ant Block. Stop them on the outside before they come inside.
Country singers Bruce Robeson and Kelly Willis.
We had a gig in half an hour.
But with my allergies, I wasn't all there. I just couldn't sing.
I told her, you need Claritin D.
So I got Claritin Clear. Claritin D relieved my worst symptoms, even congestion and sinus pressure, fast. And I wasn't drowsy.
Told you, nothing works stronger, faster, or longer.
Find Claritin D on shelf or at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed among non-drowsy oral 24-hour OTC allergy products.
Live Claritin Clear.
Some efforts to breed fish might turn out new generations that are vulnerable to disease. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Government agencies raise a lot of fish in hatcheries that will be released later into the wild. If they don't pay close attention to the genetic makeup of the parent generation, the younger ones might have difficulty surviving and reproducing. Tony Goldberg is a research veterinarian at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says wild fish often have genetic qualities that give them special advantages in specific bodies of water. Hatcheries often breed fish that come from different places, and Goldberg says mixing up the genetic pools can compromise the survival of the young.
Wild fish, even though they may look the same across broad geographic areas, can be very adapted to their local conditions. A fish from one river system or one lake system may be uniquely adapted to that river and that lake and the ecological conditions there. And if it's then brought into captivity and the progeny of those fish are released somewhere else, then the genes that they bring with them may not be optimal for the new environment.
Goldberg says interbreeding can compromise the offspring. The young fish might have more trouble than native fish surviving in the wild, and they also might be more vulnerable to disease. Goldberg says interbreeding also can weaken the immune system of the offspring.
And because the immune system is such a wonderfully complex system, disrupting the genes in that system, even a little bit, might have far-reaching effects on the ability of an animal to fend off infection.
Goldberg says hatcheries would do well to pay more attention to the origins and genetic makeup of the fish they choose as parents to improve the survival of their offspring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
If you're a diabetic, you'll want to listen to this message from the Diabetes Line. If you call us today, you may be able to get your testing supplies delivered right to your door with no out-of-pocket costs. We have all the supplies you'll ever need, and getting those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your door is as easy as calling this number. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254. If you have Medicare or private insurance, you might be able to get those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your home with no out-of-pocket cost. We even file all the claim forms so you never have to wait for those reimbursement checks. If you're a diabetic and you want testing supplies delivered right to your door, call the Diabetes Line 24 hours a day. 800-365-7254. 800-365-7254. 800-365-7254.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Plot for total world domination. I'll just leave it at that this time. Welcome back to our program. 9 minutes before the hour coming up on it here. Tom Hartman with you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And David in Blaine, Washington. Hey, David, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Tom. I just wanted to share some good news for all of your listeners about the manual recount. Did you happen to touch on that? I missed the first part.
I have
part
not discussed it today, no.
For the 50th district, besides the fact that he was already sworn into Congress, and the
You're
fact
talking about
that
the Busby-Bill Ray race here,
right, and the fact that you know the absentee ballots weren't counted, the voting machines were taken home with memory cards that were programmable. I mean, the person that was in charge of oversighting, you know, the and protecting the vote didn't do it,
mm-hmm.
Which decertifies those votes.
So it sounded, David, when you first called, like you had some news for us. Has something happened with the recount, or is there
no?
That
well,
I missed?
The deadline was supposed to be for today, but
yeah.
Because it's a holiday, tomorrow's the deadline.
I see.
To get everything squared away so that they can do the manual recount once and for all.
Yeah. See, the thing that concerns me the most, David, about that race is, I mean, you know, certainly the whole issue of voting machines going home, that probably happened all across the country. I mean, that is a huge issue, and it's one that needs to be highlighted, and people need to be yelling about, and the corruption of the vote. I mean, look at what happened in Ohio. Look at what Robert Kennedy documented in the Rolling Stone magazine.
That's right.
But the story behind the story that progressives are not talking about, and certainly the Democratic Party is not talking about in that race, is that when Francine Busby made that remark before a group Hispanic audience, that essentially what she was trying to say is you don't need to be a U.S. citizen to work on a political campaign.
Let
me just finish my point here.
Sure.
And her words were, you know, poorly chosen, A, and taken out of context, B, by her opponent, and he pounded this thing. He pounded the airwaves for 4 or 5 days before the election with her own words, suggesting that she was trying to say to illegal immigrants that they should go out and vote for her. And that, you know, really flipped out a lot of people. And what is not being talked about by the Democrats and by progressives is the potency of this issue of illegal immigration in this election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, the Republicans are going to come and they're going to whack the Democrats upside the back of the head and in the last few weeks before the election in November, and the Democrats are not going to have seen this thing coming. And I'm saying right now, it's coming. They're going to use illegal immigration to beat up the Democrats. And the way that the Democrats right now could immunize themselves from this is to start the discussion about illegal immigration.
employers. Because what we have in this country is not an illegal immigrant problem. We have an illegal employer problem.
Yeah, you just took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, 30 years ago in the United States, we had about a million people coming into this country illegally from the South. And every year, about a million people would leave this country back to the South. Why? They would come up here for seasonal work and then they would leave. In the last 10, 15 years, we're still having an average of about a million people a year coming into this country. The difference is they're not leaving. And the reason that they're not leaving is because it's no longer seasonal agricultural jobs. Now there's jobs being opened all over the United States to people who are not citizens. It's wrong. It's illegal. It's diluting the labor force. It's driving down the cost of labor. And the average American knows it. Joe Sixpack knows it. Joe Sixpack is really upset about it. It has nothing to do with the racist agenda of the wackos or the, you know, I mean, yes, they're out there demagoguing this. But really what it has to do with is that this is part of the war against organized labor that Ronald Reagan declared in 1981. In fact, it was Reagan's amnesty in 86, and Reagan was the one who, for all practical purposes, stopped enforcing the regulations, the IRS regulations, that said that you have to have a valid Social Security number. You can't deduct the cost of labor for your employees. And so we need to be, the Democrats need to be talking, and progressives need to be talking about illegal employers, and they need to be talking about it loudly to shift the debate away from a discussion about illegal immigrants, because when the illegal employers stop employing, the illegal immigrants will, as they did for 50, 70, 80, 100 years or more, they will go back home when there's no longer jobs.
Well, I'm looking at how much time they've taken to even consider raising the minimum wage after 10 years.
Yeah, well, and they've been able to do that in large part because the labor pool is being diluted. I mean, that problem is real, and I think that Francine Busby just, you know, blew it, and the Democrats had a great opportunity to turn that thing around. They could have done jujitsu, and they failed to, and if they don't do it between now and November, they're going to get nailed. Aaron in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Aaron, we have about a half a minute. You quick point you wanted to make?
Oh, yeah. No, your tea parties, I think they were objecting to the East India Company. They were more like Walmart, you know?
Yeah, well, that was my point, that this country was founded, the Boston Tea Party, this country was founded on basically a Seattle WTO type of revolt. It was, they were rising up against a corporation that was behaving very much like Walmart.
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, those were. Aaron, thanks a lot for the call.
Take care. Bye.
Good to hear from you. And you know, he's just spot on right, by the way, I would say as well, because that, when I was reading the story from George Robert Twelvetree Hughes in the first hour of the program about the Boston Tea Party and how the whole thing happened, it was the taxation without representation, the Tea Act of 1773, was not an increase in taxes on tea. It was a cut in taxes on tea. A cut on taxes that specifically benefited the East India Company and would have wiped out the small entrepreneurial ventures. And the colonists said, no, we want to hold on to our small businesses. We don't want a Walmartization of America. And I believe we should be standing up and saying that again. And in fact, many people are all across the United States. We just need to organize our voices a little more coherently, a little more cohesively. 57 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman program on July 4th. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Were you lucky enough to get an iPod for Christmas? If you did, now maybe you need some accessories. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics. We're the largest Apple dealer in New England, and we've got iPod accessories coming out of our... Oops. We've got a lot of iPod accessories, like the Small Dog Groove Cube, a portable pair of speakers for your iPod, which cost only $29.95, or the HipPod, a hip-attaching carrying case with external speakers for $25. Stay warm this winter in a Burton iPod jacket. For the family, maybe it's time for a home theater system. We bundle a Mac Mini, THX sound system, and an LCD projector. It's adjustable up to 300 inches diagonal for only $1,400.
Visit smalldog.com or call them at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-MACS. Tell them Tom Hartman sent you.
Hey, that's a great idea. You could really cash in.
I hope. I've been working on it for years.
Have you got a patent on it?
Not yet. I don't know what to do. I don't know what I need.
Just call Inventec. They can help you protect and market your idea. They've been doing it for inventors for over 10 years. It's easy.
Inventec? That's exactly what I need.
Then call 1-800-319-1818.
Slow down.
That's 1-800-319-1818. And they'll even send you a free inventor's kit and DVD with your confidential submission.
How do you know this?
I called them myself. I have a really good idea of my own, and thanks to Inventec, no one's going to cash in but me. They're going to help me get my invention off the drawing board and into the marketplace.
I really need Inventec. What's that number again?
1-800-319-1818.
One more time?
Call 1-800-319-1818. That's 1-800-319-1818.
Air America Radio News. I'm Emily Hoffman. An Independence Day pep talk from Bush about his war in Iraq. He continues to insist that U.S. troops will overcome persistent violence in the battered country. The outlook was less optimistic in Baghdad today. Gunmen in camouflage uniforms kidnapped Iraq's deputy electricity minister Raed al-Harris and 11 of his bodyguards in eastern Baghdad. They have since released him, but a Sunni female legislator who was seized 3 days ago in east Baghdad is still missing. Meanwhile, remember Bush's promise to bring Osama bin Laden to justice, dead or alive? That's apparently no longer a priority for the CIA. The New York Times reports that the special unit at the agency that had been looking for bin Laden was shut down late last year. Officials told the Times it's because al-Qaeda's leadership structure has changed. A country in chaos, an Iraqi provincial police chief resigned today, and the governor says he will leave his post after coalition forces turn over security to Iraqi forces in the southern area later this month. They say they fear that violence will increase. A member of the provincial council says the decisions were made at a meeting after nearly 300 fired policemen stormed into the local government headquarters in Samawa earlier in the day to protest their lost jobs. Meanwhile, Marine Corporal Joshua Belial has a very sick sense of humor. He says the song he wrote and performed about killing members of an Iraqi family was intended as a joke. A record producer says the North Carolina Marine had planned to record Haji Girl and perform it on the conservative Mike Church talk show, but his plans were nixed, presumably by Marines higher up. The military cannot handle more bad press right now, especially after the charges that Marines killed civilians at Haditha. And a launch controller says Florida's weather is looking good for the space shuttle launch later this hour. The six astronauts are strapped in their seats and counting down the minutes before hurtling into the sky. NASA officials say they'll keep close watch on a flaw in the foam insulation on a fuel tank. For Air America Radio News, I'm Emily Hoffman.
News sponsored in part by Mahatma and Carolina Rice, making it easy to add whole grain to your diet. For delicious brown rice recipes, visit them on the web. Enjoy Mahatma or Carolina Rice. It's good for you.
Support our troops. We hear it practically every day. It's something we all agree on. Whenever and wherever the men and women of our armed forces are called, we send our support with them. It's something we all do. And supporting the USO is how it's done. The USO receives no government funding and depends entirely on the generosity of the American people. To find out more, call us at 888-USO-5566 or visit our website at uso.org.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us the plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question. Whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
If you're one of the millions of Americans that suffers from acne or knows a friend or a loved one suffering, please turn up your radio and take down this life-changing information. Introducing Epiclear, the revolutionary new advanced skin treatment imported from Europe, formulated to help get rid of pimples and prevent further breakouts. Great for all ages and most skin irritations, Epiclear is doing something that no other acne treatment formula has ever done. Ever. We're so confident that Epiclear will clear up your skin that we're willing to let you try it for free. That's right, you heard free, and we mean free. Over a $70 value delivered without a prescription right to your house.
Call now while free supplies last at 1-800-701-3026. Nothing to risk and everything to gain. Call Epiclear at 1-800-701-3026. That was 1-800-701-3026. Limit one order per household, please. Call 1-800-701-3026. Shipping and handling not included.
When you struggle with credit card bills every month, you're not just in debt. Debt is all around you.
I see people every day that are on the brink. They're going to go over the edge, and at the bottom is bankruptcy, and we pull them back.
The people who provide Care One Credit Counseling Services know how to help you get out of debt and get on with your life. So call now, 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019. We can help you stop the collection calls, pay off your debt sooner, and save up to 57% every month.
You do get to consolidate your payments. You only have to worry about making one payment a month instead of making three or four or five.
Call for licensing details. Get out of debt and get on with your life. Gather up your bills and talk to the people who can help, to the people who care. Call Care One Credit Counseling now. 800-297-3019. 800-297-3019. That's 800-297-3019.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. James Bowman is on the line with us. He's the resident scholar at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. His website, jamesbowman.net. James Bowman, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you with us. You write that there is a real significant choice of words in this latest message from Osama bin Laden when he's talking about Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, calling him a lion and a brave knight and referring to us as crusaders. What's the significance of this?
Well, it's one indication, I think, Tom, of the extent to which the Iraqi insurgency depends on these myths of essentially out of the Middle Ages of crusaders and knights and so on, which is a symptom of the honor culture that they belong to. My book called Honor: A History helps to explain what the difference is between that honor culture and the one in the West, which is now more or less fallen away. We don't have much in the way of an honor culture anymore, and I also explain the reasons for that. But when there was one, and insofar as we have a memory of what our honor culture used to be like, it's very different from that we find in other parts of the world, including the Arab world.
How, James Bowman, in your book Honor: A History, how do you differentiate between an honor culture and contemporary American culture, for example?
Well, the honor culture is really the norm, and through most of human history, all cultures have been honor cultures. It's only in very recent times that we've kind of shed ours and got rid of it as something that we don't need anymore. But through most of human history, honor has been a huge concern for.
You say we've traded it in for a celebrity culture?
Well, that's one of the things that's replaced it. Yeah, when the honor culture goes, it creates a vacuum that kind of sucks in things that are not dissimilar, but fundamentally different, such
right.
as the celebrity culture.
Well, and you see these things like Paris Hilton or Ann Coulter, you know, people who are famous purely for being famous.
Well, yes, I think that's one of the symptoms of a celebrity culture. And another is that, unlike honor, you can't lose celebrity. No matter what you do, it only increases your celebrity. Whereas in an honor culture, it was possible to lose honor, to be disgraced, and to fall out of the honor pantheon. Celebrities only become greater celebrities when they misbehave and do things wrong.
So, are you associating a value judgment with these? Do you think that the loss of an honor culture, for example, in the United States, is something that should concern us?
Well, I think it is, yes, because it's one of the ways in which we defend ourselves. We identify ourselves as a distinct people, and one of the ways in which we defend ourselves as a local phenomenon. I think the honor culture of the military still exists, and without it, I don't think the military could continue to function. But the gap between military honor culture and the more general society-wide understanding of these things becomes greater all the time because of our lack of a more general honor culture.
We're talking with James Bowman. He's a resident scholar at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. His website, jamesbowman.net, author of the book Honor, A History. James Bowman, when I was a kid, growing up in the 50s and the 60s in the United States, if a CEO was to go about destroying essentially a community, mass layoffs, it was a scandal. In fact, when General Motors first did it, when Roger Smith first shut down factories, GM factories in Flint, Michigan, and moved them to Mexico, Michael Moore made a movie out of it, Roger and Me, it shocked people. It shocked people, particularly in Michigan, but it shocked people all across the United States. And it was viewed, at the time anyway, as a failure. If a CEO did that, it was viewed as a failure. And yet in the last 20 years or so, or I'd say largely since the so-called Reagan Revolution in the early 1980s, we've seen where now when corporate heads behave in ways that destroy communities and harm workers, if it increases corporate profit, and particularly if it increases their paychecks, they are celebrated. Chainsaw Al Dunlop comes into Sunbeam and cuts 10,000 jobs and, walks away with a multimillion-dollar paycheck, and he's lionized.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but I think it's part of a more general decline in what I call the honor culture. And one of the things that replaces it is not only celebrity, but also this kind of legalistic view that if you can get away with it, it's okay. There's no sort of unwritten obligation of the kind that you mention to behave honorably, so long as we take this kind of view of the world that nowadays, if it's not illegal, which the kinds of things you mentioned never have been, then it must be okay.
Yeah, it's like Bush now. It's coming out that he actually told Cheney to discredit Joe Wilson, but he didn't actually say the word out his wife. So apparently it was legal what he did.
Well, I don't know if we're going to agree about that one. I think if the commander in chief hasn't got the right to say what should be classified and what shouldn't, then I don't know who does. But
then aren't we making legal distinctions here rather than honor distinctions?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't say that. Although I can see how you might think so. But I do think that the decline of the honor culture is responsible for a lot of the things that you would object to about the Bush administration. In my book, I explain why it was, I think, that Bush made such an issue out of the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, because it was the thing everyone could agree on, as Paul Wolfowitz put it, and yet they didn't understand. And here we come back to the honor culture of the enemy. They didn't understand that in a culture like that, Saddam Hussein was much more likely to hide the fact that he didn't have the weapons than the fact that he did have them. The honor culture is all about looking strong and looking tough and looking mean and making people afraid of you. To admit that he had got rid of his WMDs would have disgraced him in the eyes of his own.
Well, it would have made him vulnerable too. to neighboring countries. But so are you suggesting that because Iraq is still an honor society, and virtually all of the Middle East is operating as honor societies, and we have become, what do you call it, a consumer society?
Yeah, well, that's one of the things. It is individualistic, consumer-oriented, live for today.
There's not a word, though, that describes the antithesis of an honor society.
Well, one that I use is the self-esteem society. I think that another thing that replaces honor is self-esteem. It's become a kind of constant in our educational thinking these days.
So is this differentiation between these two kinds of societies one of the major problems that we face in trying to participate in Middle Eastern politics?
I think it is. I think it's why we didn't understand what was going on then, and why to some extent we still don't understand what's going on today among the enemy, who are doing what they do, not because they have military objectives in the traditionally understood sense, but because they want to make honorable statements. They want to inflict harm upon us or upon their enemies, and that's what you do. You create these kinds of incidents where you strike a blow.
Sure.
Twin Towers was one of those.
Yeah. Now here it is, 2006, and I suspect that if the United States, if Mexico were to say, that George Bush, he wasn't really elected. We're gonna overthrow him. The guy's got WMDs, and they invaded the United States or Canada for that matter. That most Americans. And I would certainly be part of that group. Most Americans would take up arms to repel an invading army. And don't you think that most Iraqis view themselves in that way? I mean, if we're not an honor society anymore, and yet I think most Americans would do this. And we only have about 20, 30 seconds left here, sir. I'm sorry.
I don't think most. I think there are a lot of them, particularly the Sunnis, that do. Yes, that's right. But there's an awful lot of Shiites, the majority, in fact, of the country, and Kurds, who wouldn't think that way at all.
Because they're being given the keys to the kingdom that they didn't have before?
Well, partly that, and partly because they were so badly mistreated by the Saddam Hussein regime.
So this is an opportunity for them to redeem their honor.
Yeah.
Interesting. James Bowman, his website, jamesbowman.net, his book, Honor, A History. Thanks for being with us today, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. I'll be right back.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with a first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. And Avacor with Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order, plus a free gift from Avacor's hair care line of products. Call 1-800-884-6270. That's 1-800-884-6270. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-884-6270. That's 1-800-884-6270.
Do you have one of those really good jobs in which your pay is automatically raised every single year by nearly $4,000? And the only way your pay hike can be withheld is if you choose not to accept it. You won't find these jobs in the Help Wanted ads, friends. You find them in Congress. Once again, our Congress creditors have generously bestowed a pay hike on themselves, raising their total annual take to $168,500 apiece. These are the same people who have refused to raise America's poverty-level minimum wage for 10 years and who have shown no concern for the majority of American working families whose wages have not even kept up with the rising cost of living. This month, House members voted for the 8th year in a row to up their own pay. In a little game of political dodgeball, congressional leaders of both parties run an insider scam that makes their pay raises automatic, unless they magnanimously vote to block it. Guess what? They don't. For 8 straight years, these statesmen have grabbed the money and run. Speaking of running, both parties' leaders have cut a secret Save the Incumbents pact, agreeing that their candidates will not use the pay raise as an issue in the fall elections. And you thought there was no bipartisanship left on Capitol Hill. Members tried to dismiss the pay hikes as a trivial sum, merely enough to keep them ahead of inflation. Over the 8 years of steady raises, however, these cost-of-living adjustments, as Congress likes to call them, have added a total of $32,000 to their paychecks. That's more than the annual income of most Americans, and it further isolates our Congress critters from the harsh economic reality being faced today by the great majority of people they supposedly represent. This is Jim Hightower saying, shouldn't at least one party be campaigning to bring Congress down to earth, starting with ending this soft cushion of automatic pay raises?
Ever notice how people differ on how America's doing? On Wall Street, they say things are going great. Big oil's profits are through the roof. CEOs are raking in millions. And big corporations love paying foreigners those dirt cheap wages. Different story for the rest of us. Gas prices are murder. Millions of jobs are being exported. And now they're saying our kids will have a lower standard of living. Something's got to change. Something already has, and it's this. The people who've always fought to give the rest of us a stronger voice are losing their clout. America's unions. It hasn't happened by accident. The laws that protect a worker's right to choose a union are weaker than ever, and Wall Street wants to keep it that way. So America's got a choice. We can let Wall Street keep telling us how things work, or we can restore a worker's freedom to choose a union without fear of being fired, the way democracy's supposed to work. Paid for by the United Steelworkers on the World Wide Web at usw.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
There is no political solution to our trouble evolution.
And welcome back to the True People's Radio. Tom Hartman here with you, 21 minutes past the hour. Amazing stuff here in the news today on the 4th of July. By the way, happy 4th of July. Within the next hour, I believe, maybe an hour and 10 minutes or so, the astronauts may be lifting off. The part of the story that is not so often told is how much of NASA's budget, now a significant majority, is being underwritten by the military, how their mission has changed from being a fundamentally civilian mission to being a fundamentally military mission. But nonetheless, the space shuttle about to take off, we wish them well. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., Rick Klein, actually in the Boston Globe, reporting today that the House of Representatives, John Boehner, at the head of the Republicans in the House, has decided to try to take away from the Democrats what he called their cynical ploy to use the minimum wage as a campaign centerpiece.
This is a cynical ploy,
says Bonner. And then he says, Republicans, we're going to probably have to find some way to deal with it. Yeah, that's a verbatim quote. So in all probability now, it's looking like the Republicans may actually vote to raise the minimum wage. They haven't allowed a vote on this thing since 1997, the last time. And so we'll see. As Rick Klein in the Boston Globe writes, a flurry of votes by Democrats in recent weeks has vaulted the minimum wage to the top tier of issues in Washington and in House races across the country. And that's the kicker there. That's the thing. And Democrats are right out there. They're talking about this. They're saying, you know, out loud, hey, what we need to do this fall is we need to use the minimum wage as the main topic to beat up Republicans because it resonates with people. People get it. Not only does it resonate with the tens of millions of minimum wage workers in the United States, but it resonates with all workers in the United States because it's a metaphor for the larger war against working people that has been waged unrelentingly by conservatives in this country since the election of Ronald Reagan in 1981. And as that war on not just organized labor, but war on working people continues, the Republicans are, you know, they have figured out that they can't do what they used to do back before the Great Depression. Back before the Great Depression, back in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, 1900, 1910, 1920s, the Republicans used to say, yeah, we're the party of the fat cats. We're the party of the railroad barons and the robber barons and, yep, John D. Rockefeller and J.P. Morgan, that's us. And we'll create prosperity. We'll build a railroad. We'll build the steel plants. We'll give you all jobs. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. And a lot of Americans actually bought that. It was a variation on the old benevolent dictatorship or, you know, the enlightened king theory. But, you know, Americans said, okay, all right. If you guys, you know, you've got all the money and you think you know what you're doing, you run the country. And the problem was they ran the country in such a way that it so dramatically increased their own wealth and so wiped out the middle class. We had this teetering, tottering tower of wealth in the late 1920s. The disparity between the rich and the poor in the United States at such a great level that many historians and many economists argue it triggered the Great Depression. And we're, by the way, for the first time since 1929, we're back at that point, which is giving a lot of people pause. In fact, some are suggesting that the only reason the stock market hasn't gone kerflooey the way it did in 1929 is because there are so many large institutional investors now in the stock market, mostly pension funds that came about as the result of union activity, Democratic stuff, that is acting as a buffer for the stock market. They're not, you know, they're not shifting out quickly the way investors did in the late 20s. And so the market hasn't crashed yet. But in any case, Americans said to the Republicans, okay, cool, you're the party of the fat cats. Run the country and do a good job. And it wasn't until the Great Depression that Americans, by and large, realized, Republican Party of the Fat Cats, no, we don't want them running this country anymore. And so, as Harry Truman pointed out in 1948, he said, it must have been 48, because he said it's an even numbered year, therefore the Republicans, for a few months, will start talking like Democrats. And sure enough, here we are, 2006. It's an even-numbered year again. It's an election year, and the Republicans are going to start talking like Democrats. And here this piece by Rick Klein in today's Boston Globe, 4th of July, talking about how, yeah, the Republicans, they're going to come out in favor of an increase for the minimum wage. Gee, what a surprise. Harry Truman was right again. Our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. If there's anything on your mind you want to kick around, chat about, give us a shout. 27 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program live on the 4th of July.
This is Vasilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question.
whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Looking for a reason to try online dating? Match.com has 15 million of them, with our 15 million members. And now, here's one more.
You do want to make a good first impression. You do want to step up and put your best foot forward.
Match.com is working with Dr. Phil, and our members are loving his insight. We'll show you who. He'll show you how. So come see what Match.com can do for you. Match.com, the number one site for love.
You've been hearing about Hypemax, but you still haven't ordered? Hypemax is a patented blend of vitamins, herbs, and amino acids available now without a prescription. Designed for 12 to 25-year-olds, Hypemax is a supplement that provides extra nutrients during those critical growth years when the body reaches its full height potential. Order Hypemax direct today at 1-877-GROW-TALL. There's a 30-day risk-free offer going on now. That's 1-877-GROW-TALL, or buy it on the web at Hypemax.com.
Hypemax is a subsidiary of Sunny Health Nutrition Technology.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Northwest Airline flight attendants have less than 2 weeks to negotiate with airline management under threat of a bankruptcy judge's destruction of their labor contracts. The court has granted Northwest the right to destroy the contract, but it put a 14-day stay on the decision. If the union doesn't reach an agreement, Northwest can impose its terms on the union. As Northwest's flight attendants struggle with that, they're also voting on switching their union representation. That voting ends July 6th. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, is seeking to represent the flight attendants, replacing the Professional Flight Attendants Association at Northwest. Pat Friend, AFA-CWA president, says Northwest flight attendants need the resources and experience of her union to get through this difficult time.
Nearly all of the workers at the Port of Oakland are now unionized after more than 200 workers voted in favor of organizing last week. The International Federation of Technical and Professional Engineers will now represent workers who in the past have typically filled the void when other unions at the port have gone on strike. The union represents many employees in management roles at the port. The average salary of the workers joining the union is between $70,000 and $80,000 a year, and they receive full medical benefits. The drive for unionization began more than 6 weeks ago out of concern of a future where non-unionized port workers typically are targeted when it comes time to make budget cuts. Traditionally, union members do not cross the picket lines of other unions, an issue that concerns port management now that nearly all of the port employees are in labor unions.
Nurses at Robert Wood Johnson Hospital in New Jersey are trying to win language in their contract that would protect their union rights from an upcoming expected anti-worker NLRB decision. The nurses want to guard against losing their union rights under the Kentucky River decisions. Employers in that case are trying to get the NLRB to exclude many thousands of workers from union protection by expanding the definition of supervisors.
Pilots at UPS have reached a tentative agreement with the package company on a new contract. The tentative agreement comes after 3 years of strike threats and stonewalling. The union is reporting that the agreement includes work rule changes and improvements to wages and pensions that will expire in 2011. In December of 2005, the pilots had requested that the two sides be released from federal mediation so they would be free to strike. That request was refused. More than 2,500 pilots are represented by the Independent Pilots Association at UPS. Here is today's economic report. Consumer confidence took a hit in May as Americans tightened their belts to pay for rising fuel prices. While spending still grew slightly by 0.4%, the Commerce Department said there are signs of cooling. There was also slower growth in the area of income growth, a sign that tends to correspond with weaker job growth.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you're a diabetic, you'll want to listen to this message from the Diabetes Line. If you call us today, you may be able to get your testing supplies delivered right to your door with no out-of-pocket costs. We have all the supplies you'll ever need, and getting those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your door is as easy as calling this number. 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254. If you have Medicare or private insurance, you might be able to get those diabetic testing supplies delivered right to your home with no out-of-pocket cost. We even file all the claim forms so you never have to wait for those reimbursement checks. If you're a diabetic and you want testing supplies delivered right to your door, call the Diabetes Line 24 hours a day. 800-365-7254. 800-365-7254. 800-365-7254.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Radio Support Group, Bob Byatt for We the People of the United States of America. Happy July 4th, Tom Hartman with you, 34 minutes past the hour, and time to check out what's going on with the occupation of Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lives in the balance.
Security and other developments in Iraq. Today, the 4th of July, as of 1315 GMT, the feed from Reuters. Dateline Baghdad. Gunmen killed an employee in the Ministry of Culture's office in southwestern Baghdad. Dateline Hawija. A civilian was killed and two others wounded when several mortar rounds landed near an Iraqi army checkpoint. Dateline Baghdad. Gunmen abducted Iraq's deputy electricity minister, Ra'ad al-Harith, and 19 bodyguards after ambushing their convoy in eastern Baghdad. Dateline Fallujah, gunmen wounded a member of the Association of Muslim Scholars, a Sunni religious group, on Monday. In Baghdad, Iraqi and U.S. troops killed 7 insurgents during 2-hour-long clashes on Sunday night in Baghdad's northern Ahmadiyya district. And 2 police were killed and 4 others wounded when a roadside bomb struck near a police checkpoint in eastern Baghdad. So those the goings-on right now in Iraq. Now, in the meantime, the Republicans, well, they're coming up with some plans. Yep, plans.
All right, Republicans, line up for duty. Where are you going? Hey! Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks.
Now, what's the Bush plan for Iraq? Well, it turns out there is one.
Chicken hawks. Karl Rove, he didn't serve. Dick Cheney, he didn't serve. Tom DeLay, he didn't serve. And George Bush was A-W-O-L.
So, here, as far as we can tell, this is from the Ironic Times. This is the Bush plan for Iraq to keep the enemy confused and off balance. That's the key to their plan. On Mondays, withdraw troops by the end of 2007, starting with a big drawdown this September. Just in time for the 2008 elections, by the way. I predict that you're going to see that. Then Tuesdays, cancel withdrawal plans, and whoever said that is crazy. And Wednesday, a big U.S. military operation to crush insurgency in restive provinces. And then Thursdays, let the Iraqis crush the insurgency themselves. And then Friday, amnesty for terrorists, if that's what Maliki wants. And then Saturdays, no amnesty for the terrorists, no matter what that idiot Maliki wants. And then Sundays, change the subject, attack the press, accuse the Democrats of having no plan for Iraq. So there you go. The Republican plan for Iraq. For what it's worth. Here's perhaps one of the weirdest notes, stories in today's news here on the 4th of July. It's an Associated Press story. By the way, the space shuttle just launched, taking off right now successfully. All is well. So, the Associated Press reporting, a Marine corporal who wrote and performed a song about killing members of an Iraqi family has temporarily shelved the tune, a NC record producer said, a North Carolina record producer said Monday. Corporal Joshua Belial had planned to professionally record a song he wrote called Haji Girl with Hits Music Studios, a Spencer-based company contracted under the conservative talk program The Mike Church Show, which was to release the tune. But studio co-owner Jim Mosher said the 23-year-old Iraqi veteran nixed the plans late last week. Mosher said, we got a call from him, and he said he just couldn't do the recording at this time. I was led to believe that he had it from high command. He wasn't to record the song. Neither Belial nor the Marines returned phone messages seeking comment Monday. Haji Girl first surfaced in a four-minute video circulated on the Internet. In that clip, Belial sings a first-person story about a Marine who falls in love with an Iraqi woman. The two travel to her house, where they encounter hostility from family members. Relatives kill the woman, prompting the Marine to use the woman's little sister as a human shield before gunning down the family members. Someone posted the recording, which shows Belial in front of a cheering crowd on the website YouTube, though it has since been removed. That posting came as the military was investigating a handful of cases of reporting killings of innocent civilians. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. 1-866... Ellen, I'm just told all is still well with the space shuttle discovery. It is breaching the atmosphere and heading into outer space. Tom in London, England on the line. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling from the UK.
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
I'm fine. What are you doing in England?
Oh, God, I forgot. I came here about 10 years ago. Part of it had to do with a bit of I was concerned about the history of the American Indian and what happened. And yeah. there's no day that commemorates that, as you know, in America. I mean, Thanksgiving, now we give thanks to God, don't we? We don't give thanks to the actual Wampanoags. But there's this quote from Thomas Jefferson. I'll read it to you quickly. It says, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, which I thought was kind of poignant for today, especially with what's happening with the state of our union now.
Yeah, and Jefferson actually was referring to slavery when he said that.
Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah.
I thought it might be somewhat applicable because, again, the American Indians, it's just not enough exposure about it, what went on. And I think it would be nice if there was at least some kind of holiday that was part apology and part recognition and everything else. And being Independence Day, I just thought I'd bring that up with you.
No, it's a good point and well said. And, my recollection as a kid growing up was that when we celebrated Thanksgiving, we actually did talk about the role of the Native Americans in saving the lives, literally, of the early colonists and that kind of thing. Is that gone now from American schools?
Well, from what I remember, it absolutely is gone. I don't think it's talked about at all, really. Except for them bringing corn and maize or whatever it was to. Well, in the universities, they do talk about it if you take the right classes. But just the consciousness of the nation, it's just not there. It seems like. And if there was at least a day, I mean, here you have Columbus Day, I mean, of all things, you know. And what did he do? He wiped out the Hispaniola.
The Tianos, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I was going to say. And, yeah. we celebrate him. So I think that's kind of, that says it all, really.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Tom, yesterday we had this press report about how the Brits, over 70% of citizens of the United Kingdom view Americans as in a negative light, shall we say, and that's different from just 10 years ago, from before the Bush administration, basically.
Well, when I got here, it was Clinton, and it was kind of a joke, the whole thing about ugly Americans and our enthusiasm versus their sort of reserve, and that was okay, you can get by that, but now you're an American, and it kind of, I don't want to overstate things, but sometimes it feels like what it must have been like if I were, say, German in 1939, before we knew about the Holocaust.
Right.
Just based on what we knew from Hitler's aggression then.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same vibe here. And I'll tell you, I try not to, as soon as I speak, they know.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a big joke to say that, I'm Canadian, that's not flying anymore.
Well, three years ago, I was invited to speak at Oxford. And which was a great honor, you know. And in fact, the head of the college, you know, threw a big dinner for me in the one of the great halls, you know, with the waiters with the tuxes and the whole. I mean, it was just the whole hoop-de-doop. And for the talk that I gave, this was on my book on equal protection about, you know, the rise of corporate domination and the theft of human rights. And so I get up in front of this group, and there's like 350, 400 people there, most of them students. There's a few professors, probably 20, 30, And I'm introduced, and I step up, and I'm halfway into my first sentence, and some kid yells out at me, "What do you think about George Bush?" And I'm getting these like flashbacks of prime minister's questions, right? And so anyway, I said, you know, I did not vote for George Bush. I am opposed to the policies of George Bush. I'm embarrassed by George Bush. And frankly, I'm a little frightened by some of his policies. I think that he's doing great harm to the United States and to the world. And I got a standing ovation, and then they sat down and they were quiet and let me do my, you know, about an hour and a half presentation. But they were not going to let me speak until I had identified my position on George Bush.
Yeah, well,
and this is Oxford University. I mean, you know, this is where the reserved go to be reserved.
Exactly. I mean, what do we have to be proud of in the present day, currently, when we consider all the things from Guantanamo to Abu Ghraib to the initial lying for the war? Can you give me anything to be proud of presently?
Except that, I mean, our experience, your experience and my experience in England, I mean, Tony Blair was right there with George Bush.
Yeah, that's right.
And is he being let off the hook?
If I'm in a pub conversation and argument, I can always bring that up. However, I don't really want to get, defending America and you're defending Britain, because that isn't the issue, is it, you know?
Really, it's not. Ultimately, it has to be that we're all defending democracy, and the England is now, by and large, a great democracy, and the United States should become a great democracy. And
parting shot, let's hear it for the Iroquois democracy, a confederacy for today.
That's right. The Iroquois Confederacy, the first democracy in North America that we know of. I mean, obviously, it wasn't the first, but one of the greatest, and the 34 members of the Iroquois Nation who sat in Independence Hall and for the better part of 2 weeks and taught the founders how to write a constitution. Tom, thanks a lot for the call from London, England. Good to hear from you. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
Were you lucky enough to get an iPod for Christmas? If you did, now maybe you need some accessories. This is Dawn from Small Dog Electronics. We're the largest Apple dealer in New England, and we've got iPod accessories coming out of our... Oops. We've got a lot of iPod accessories, like the Small Dog Groove Cube, a portable pair of speakers for your iPod, which cost only $29.95, or the HipPod, a hip-attaching carrying case with external speakers for $25. Stay warm this winter in a Burton iPod jacket. For the family, maybe it's time for a home theater system. We bundle a Mac Mini, THX sound system, and an LCD projector. It's adjustable up to 300 inches diagonal for only $1,400.
Visit smalldog.com or call them at 1-800-511-MAX. That's 1-800-511-MACS. Tell them Tom Hartman sent you.
Some efforts to breed fish might turn out new generations that are vulnerable to disease. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Government agencies raise a lot of fish in hatcheries that will be released later into the wild. If they don't pay close attention to the genetic makeup of the parent generation, the younger ones might have difficulty surviving and reproducing. Tony Goldberg is a research veterinarian at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. He says wild fish often have genetic qualities that give them special advantages in specific bodies of water. Hatcheries often breed fish that come from different places, and Goldberg says mixing up the genetic pools can compromise the survival of the young.
Wild fish, even though they may look the same across broad geographic areas, can be very adapted to their local conditions. A fish from one river system or one lake system may be uniquely adapted to that river and that lake and the ecological conditions there. And if it's then brought into captivity and the progeny of those fish are released somewhere else, then the genes that they bring with them may not be optimal for the new environment.
Goldberg says interbreeding can compromise the offspring. The young fish might have more trouble than native fish surviving in the wild, and they also might be more vulnerable to disease. Goldberg says interbreeding also can weaken the immune system of the offspring.
And because the immune system is such a wonderfully complex system, disrupting the genes in that system, even a little bit, might have far-reaching effects on the ability of an animal to fend off infection.
Goldberg says hatcheries would do well to pay more attention to the origins and genetic makeup of the fish they choose as parents to improve the survival of their offspring. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
If you're considering a loan or bankruptcy to get out of debt, it's time for you to stop and think about how your decision will affect your finances and your credit rating. Before you do anything, talk to the experts at Trinity First. They'll provide you with a free debt analysis and a proven plan to get you out of debt.
We owe thousands in credit card debt. Those past due notices were piling up, and the collection calls were getting ugly.
Trinity looked at our situation and put us on a plan.
We started saving money, and we stopped dodging phone calls.
Trinity gave us one monthly payment we could handle.
They reduced our interest, so over time, we saved thousands.
If your debt has you down, call Trinity.
We did. Now we're debt-free for keeps.
Trinity!
Call the experts at Trinity for your free debt analysis at 800-936-7649. That's 800-936-7649. Call now, 800-936-7649.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I am me and Rummy's here. Wreck is free and we are all together. See the world burn when Dick shoots his gun. See how I lie. I'm lying. Sitting on my own brain. Waiting for the end of days. Corporation profits, bloody oil money. I'm above the law and I'll decide what's right or wrong. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Coo-coo to chew. Baghdad City policeman sitting pretty little target.
Yes, welcome back. Yes, indeed. He's the decider. Don't you know? Well, I guess we all know.
The decider, and I decide what is best.
Yeah, okay, all right. We got it, George. We got it. I understand. In fact, this is fascinating. Robert Perry over at consortiumnews.com writing about this. On October 29th, 2004, now we're going to step into the Wayback Machine here. 4 days before the U.S. presidential election. 4 days before the election. Osama bin Laden releases a videotape trashing George Bush. Bush supporters are out there running around going, this is Osama bin Laden endorsing John Kerry. Remember this? This was 4 days before the election in 2004. Well, now Ron Suskind's new book, The 1% Doctrine, which is heavily based on sources inside the CIA. I mean, this is one of the apparently one of the really, really go-to books for this year. It says, in fact, behind the walls of the CIA, the professional analysts, the people who had no political dog in the fight, their only interest was in figuring out why did Osama bin Laden release this videotape 4 days before the U.S. presidential election. Concluded that the reason why was because bin Laden wanted George Bush to be president of the United States for another term. As Robert Perry writes, according to Suskind's book, CIA analysts had spent years parsing each expressed word of the al-Qaeda leader and his deputy, Ayman Zawahiri. What they'd learned over nearly a decade is that bin Laden speaks only for strategic reasons. There, the CIA's assessment, this is from Suskind's book, The CIA's assessment at Day's End are a distillate of that kind of secret internal conversations that the American public was not sanctioned to hear. Strategic analysis. Today's conclusion? Today being October 29th, 2004, 4 days before the U.S. presidential election. Today's conclusion? Bin Laden's message was clearly designed to assist the president's reelection. At the 5 o'clock meeting, Deputy CIA Director John McLaughlin opened the issue with a consensus view. And here's now a quote. The CIA is meeting, and the deputy director, the number two guy at the CIA, John McLaughlin, he says, Bin Laden certainly did a nice favor today for the president. Bin Laden certainly did a nice favor today for the president. Well, you know, the president and the Saudis, they've been doing favors for each other for a long, long time. As Robert Perry notes, McLaughlin's comment drew nods from CIA officers at the table. Jami Misak, CIA Deputy Associate Director for Intelligence, suggested that the Al-Qaeda founder may have come to Bush's aid because bin Laden felt threatened by the rise in Iraq of Jordanian terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi. Bin Laden might have thought his leadership would be diminished if Bush lost the White House and their eye-to-eye struggle ended. But the CIA analysts also felt, Robert Perry writes, that bin Laden might have recognized how Bush's policies, including the Guantanamo prison camp, the Abu Ghraib scandal, and the endless bloodshed in Iraq, were serving al-Qaeda's strategic goals of recruiting a new generation of jihadists. Certainly, the CIA's Misak said, he, bin Laden, would want Bush to keep doing what he's been doing for a few more years. As their internal assessments sank in, the CIA analysts drifted into silence, troubled by the implications of their own conclusions. Quoting from Ron Suskind's book, an ocean of hard truths before them, such as what did it say about U.S. policies that bin Laden would want Bush reelected, remained untouched. This is the point that I have been making for a couple of years now. Well, since 2001. That you can't have, if you look at the way literature is put together, you can't have a superhero without a supervillain. Here we have the new Superman movie is coming out, right? Or it is out. I haven't seen it yet. But I guarantee you that there is a piece to the formula of the new Superman movie that is absolutely consistent and predictable and is going to be there 100%, and that is that there's going to be an anti-hero. I believe it's Lex Luthor in this movie. There's going to be an anti-hero who has an awesome amount of power, who is perceived as being the ultimate powers, the ultimately most powerful. A true supervillain. Because you can't have a superhero without a supervillain. And George Bush needed a supervillain to be the opposite of. And so rather than dealing with bin Laden like a criminal, he dealt with him as a super arch enemy. And bin Laden needed a super villain in Bush. These guys need each other. And they are using each other, and it's a symbiotic dance. And what's left behind in this dance? Us. The people of the United States, the people of Iraq, the people of the world. Bush elevates bin Laden elevates Bush, Bush elevates bin Laden elevates Bush. Each uses the other as a recruiting tool, and the world is in flames. It's time for us to wake up from this and say, hey, enough already. Coming up in the next Tom Hartman program, Jeffrey Feldman is here on the new frame, We the Democrats. I'll be challenging conservative Ken Hoagland on his idea to abolish all federal taxes. Larry Scott from VA Watchdog dropping by. That and more and your calls tomorrow, July 5th, on the Tom Hartman program, where you are in the Democracy Zone. Thanks for being with us, my friends, today. Happy 4th of July. And remember, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Charlie Pickett here for Amdro. Did you know that some ants actually prefer living in your home? That's why you need to know about Amdro Ant Block. It stops ants cold on the outside. Just sprinkle Amdro Ant Block around the foundation of your home. You see, ant blocks are bait. Ants take it back to the colony where they share it and die. Right down to the queen.